On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard to the beginning of another week, and this one might be just a little bit on the weird side, but just the same, welcome to Monday. It is, I was trying to think of what we would call this day. It's a mean people suck Monday. That's what it is. It's a mean people suck Monday. And I'll get to what I mean in a minute after a little bit of housekeeping. The housekeeping has to do with this. It is going to be an odd and foreshortened week, without a doubt. Because sort of at the last minute, my family and I have been called upon to take a trip to D.C. You see, there is a Senate hearing on Thursday afternoon in front of the Water and Wildlife Subcommittee in regard to Senate S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. That's the bill that would end mountaintop removal once and for all, mountain removal once and for all in Appalachia. One might think of it as a companion bill to H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act. And for the first time in nearly a generation, a hearing is going to be held in the Senate of the United States about what is being done to Appalachia. And the call went out for as many Appalachian people to be there as possible. And as I have told you 100 times, if I've said it once, I can't get behind this microphone and yammer if I'm not willing to do a little bit in my own regard. I can't ask you to pick up your phone and call your senator or call your member of Congress, call your councilman, your ward healer, your alderman, your library board member. I can't ask you to do anything if I'm not willing to do in my own right. And do we shall this week. So there's every likelihood there will be no show on Wednesday or Thursday, and very likely no show on Friday. There will be broadcasting tomorrow, although it might not be when you expect it. If you will, I would be mightily pleased if you will tune in at noon Eastern time, which would be 9 a.m. Pacific, which would be 2 a.m. the next day, Sydney time, because John Fox is involved with this, too. For a live broadcast of something of rather significant import. You have heard me speak on a number of occasions about Marsh Fork Elementary School and what a potential nightmare that place is. Well, there's going to be a rally tomorrow at Marsh Fork Elementary School. I alluded to it late last week. The rally will be attended by many, many of the people who spend so much of their time fighting for justice for the young students at Marsh Fork Elementary, who fight to end mountain removal in Appalachia, who stand shoulder to shoulder with oppressed peoples all over the nation and all over the world, who are subjected to basically colonial status because of the natural resources in proximity to them. Cold River Mountain Watch will be at this rally tomorrow. I will be at the rally tomorrow, as will my family. And cross your fingers, stick your tongue out, and hold that death right, and don't move, and you'll be there too. Because the horn is going to bring it to you. You'll hear from these people I've mentioned. You will also hear from Daryl Hannah, the actress and environmental activist. And you may very well hear from Dr. James Hansen, who will attempt to deliver a letter to Massey Energy there right next door to Marsh Fork Elementary. This is garnering quite a bit of attention. You can tell it is because of the response of the thugs from the coal industry, and especially the mountain removal industry. There's a blog on last week's protest. There's a blog posting over at climateground0.org where you can see the full toxic flower of mountain removal industry hate. And you can see shameful illiteracy displayed in ways that make me, as an Appalachian person, weep for shame. And it's coming from the mountain remover side. There are vile epithets being hurled toward the people organizing the rally. Let's see, I think Ms. Hannah has been referred to as, "Why don't that Hollywood bitch go back where she come from, the whore?" Dandy Don Blankenswine, Don Blankenship of Massey Energy, has begun to issue press releases, which are dutifully subjected to media stenography in this state, since most of the major media are owned in whole or in part by people also deeply involved with the destruction of this state. Dandy Don Blankenship, Don Blankenswine, Don Blankenstein, has decided to take up the same. Well, you know, I guess when all you've got's an accounting degree from Marshall, you probably missed out on a lot of history. So he doesn't realize that he's standing shoulder to shoulder with George Wallace and Lester Maddox and, you know, Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond in decrying these outside agitators who've come here. I don't see nobody from West Virginia getting elected. These is outside agitators who don't know nothing about West Virginia. Funny thing is, Massey Energy is a Richmond, Virginia corporation with ownership that spreads far beyond Richmond, Virginia, and trust me, does not stretch into West Virginia. So if you want an outside agitator, Massey Energy would pretty much have to be number one on the hit parade, right? Yeah. But he's out there squealing that old George Wallace, Strom Thurmond, Lester Maddox speech about outside agitators. And he even challenged, get the popcorn, would you? He even challenged Dr. James Hansen, the director of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, the world's leading climate scientist, to a wait for it, debate. Now, me, I think had I been Dr. Hansen, I would have just, that would have let that be water off a duck's back. You know, Albert Einstein cannot engage in debate Rain Man. Coal's good for West Virginia. Definitely good. Definitely good. Coal's definitely good. Definitely don't blow up much. No, not much. Definitely digging coal. Definitely. Of course, we dig coal excellently. We drive slow on the drag line. Oh, yeah, definitely. Because that's all that Don Blankenship has. But lo and behold, Dr. Hansen has agreed to a discussion with Don Blankenswine about coal and West Virginia. Now, me, I'm not so sure about the wisdom of this. Because, you know, if I have anything at all, I have a great store of folk wisdom. And one of them said, okay, Mom, Dad, get little Susie and little Timmy out of the room. Bob's going to use one of the fun words. Because it's an old saying around here. Never wrestle with a pig. Because you'll both get covered in shit, and the pig likes it. Well, the pig is, of course, in this case, Don Blankenship. And he does like it. And he's going to get tremendous coverage out of it from the West Virginia. Well, how about that? Don Blankenship certainly did bring it to that pointy-headed ivory tower outside agitator scientist, didn't he? Oh, that's right, Homer, he sure did. And I'm proud to be a West Virginian. You know how it goes. But we shall see. Dr. Hansen says he will stay in West Virginia for an extra day in order to engage in this debate. We shall see. Also tomorrow, I have no doubt that there will be any number of the fiends of coal and coal thugs at this rally screaming and trying to shout it down, because that's how they behave. Just as is with the case with the hearing on Thursday in Washington, D.C., one of the reasons we've been asked to be there is because rumor, you know how rumor goes. Word already has it that the Fockers, the friends of coal, the fiends of coal, have chartered two buses to try to fill up that hearing room so no one trying to speak the truth about mountain removal can have access or be heard or seen. And that's why Agnes and I are going. And that's why Margie and Ferg and Doodle are going. Because in that room there must be some from the next generations on the way up, so that these senators, especially the ones opposed to giving full citizenship and full equal rights and justice to Appalachian peoples, so that some of those senators will have to look the next generation in the eye and say, boy, girl, I'm a-sitting up here, and I'm going to screw you. Your future don't matter. You're meat to me. Because them coal companies give me lots of money to keep me reelected. And I'm going to make damn sure that I squash your future like a bug. Because that's what the coal industry pays me to do. Because, see, among other people, I do believe that Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama may sit on it. You remember him? Senator Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions III. Yeah, the guy who once said, I used to think the Klan was pretty cool till I found out they smoked the marijuana. Yeah, that's Senator Sessions. The Senator Sessions whose nomination to the federal bench was stopped because it came out that he had this little tendency of referring to African-American colleagues of his as, boy! Boy! Yeah, that's Senator Sessions. And I want senators like Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland to know that he has allies. Our good friend Maria Gonneau will be testifying at this hearing. I'm sure that the Fockers who get in there will glare daggers at her the entire time that she is speaking. So it's going to be an interesting few days. And join us tomorrow at noon Eastern Time. If everything works out and the tech works just perfectly, because see, down where this, you know, this gives you a good idea of why things are the way they are, where they are, where mountain removal is concerned. Now, here where I am, I have cell service, and I have de minimis wireless internet. Granted, it's more like dial-up, but it's still, you know, there's some kind of internet service on the wireless. When you get into the Coal River Valley, where they do the vast majority of their blasting and their destruction and their poisoning, guess what? Cell phones don't work down there, and there is no wireless internet. But there is going to be a satellite phone. And I believe that we can, working with John Fox, establish a connection that will bring everything that happens at that rally through the satellite phone, up to the satellite, down from the satellite. The phone will ring in Sydney, Australia, and John Fox will get it all to you, wherever you may be. And you will hear history made, and you will hear news made, and you will be witnesses if the coal thugs start anything. And then if everything else works out okay, I'll be home in time to do a show tomorrow evening. And then Wednesday is a road day. Thursday is the hearing in D.C. and some meetings, and a few more meetings on Friday morning and home Friday evening. Likelihood of a show Friday is very narrow. So I hope you will forgive me the foreshortened week. There's no way I could... when the call comes, you answer the call. You know, how many times have we said climb or die? Yeah. Don't talk it if you can't walk it. So that's what the week is. If you are listening after the Mike Malloy Show on his stream, welcome again to this second week of horn programming being carried after Mike's show. I know Mike and Kathy and Miss Molly are on vacation, and I hope they are relaxing, and I hope I hope Miss Molly's just making sandcastles to her heart's content, and that the sun is warm and the drink is cool, and there's some Jimmy Buffett playing in the background somewhere. I don't know. That's not beach vacation. Got to be Jimmy Buffett when you go to the beach, but never mind. No, I hope they're enjoying. And in their absence, Brad Friedman will be keeping Mike's seat warm tonight and doing what I know will be a bang-up job. Brad is a friend of this program as well. You hear the Green News Report here twice a week, every week, with he and Desi Doyen. So welcome to the program. And any thoughts you care to share, feel free to share them. The email address here is Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, bobkincaid@gmail.com. The phone number, toll-free, 877-443-2366, 877-443-2366. That spells something, too. It spells 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N. If you've got your own unlimited long-distance dialing plan or something that doesn't break the bank and you want to save us a nickel or a buck on the toll-free, you can always reach us at 304-658-3333, 304-658-3333. Now, I wanted to share something with you. I heard one of Mike's listeners discovered the program through Mike's urging and dropped me a line after the story about Sherry Goforth, who works for Senator Dianne Black in Tennessee, and that little racist picture she sent along, the Sherry Goforth did. And this is some admirable activism, and it stirred me, and I wanted to share it with you. Jude writes, I, too, have found you via Mike Malloy. This is my first night listening. This is from a couple of nights ago. Thank you for the time you provide the caller and your ability to listen carefully. I can hear the callers leaning into more of what they need to say as the dialogue continues. This afternoon, I called Senator Dianne Black's office. There was no one to answer. Then going directly into voicemail, in a respectful manner, I found myself visualizing speaking directly to her. With a sense of unbelievable shock over the degrading photo her assistant had emailed out, probing how could any woman ever live in that type of mindset, how foreign that was to me. Jude says, I have a 5-year-old grandson who is a precious and precocious child who viewed that photo on my computer. Nana, what is that? Pointing to the two white eyes in the last photo. In the message to Senator Black today, I requested of her to call me and tell me what I should tell him, and asked her what she thought I must have felt at that moment. I left her with the knowledge that this child was also biracial, and did that make her think or feel anything? That email was not a mistake in being sent on the part of Sherry Goforth. And everything one does has its own ramifications. I will call each day till she finally returns in some form an answer for me to give my grandchild. Signed, Jude from Seattle. Jude put together an organization called Women Standing. And she says it will be 3 years this August since Women Standing began its own visual to all. Black combat boots and white flowers over my left shoulder, both walking and standing. I do this to honor those who have been killed and for the intention of peace. Jude says, Mike has honored Women Standing with placing the combat boots and flowers I carry at the bottom of his website, breathing in and breathing out. This was a couple of days ago as well. Today was my second telephone call to Senator Dianne Black's office. Going into voicemail instantly, I left my name, telephone number, and included my email address, requesting either she or a staff person to return my call and tell me exactly what to say to my 5-year-old grandson, who wanted to know what the two white eyes were on the email sent by Sherry Goforth. I will call every day till someone contacts me. And I know she will. And that is beautiful courage. And I look forward. I don't know if Jude will ever get an answer, because I don't know if these thugs of the right wing have the courage to give an honest answer for the honest. I don't know if they can honestly hold and honestly own up to their racism, their bigotry, their sexism, their homophobia. I don't know if they can. It's a little bit like what Bill Maher said recently. The Democratic Party has moved to the right, and the Republican Party has moved to a mental hospital. Very, very true. I don't know if they will ever find the courage to answer Jude in Senator Dianne Black's office. But I know they will get very uncomfortable. Even if they get to the point where they hit beep, delete, every time they hear her voice, it will still be a voice that is there, and it will still be a voice that is questioning. And it will still be a question that they know they have not had the courage to answer. And in confronting their own cowardice, they will confront the absolute evil of all that they are. And you know what? It's hard to live that way. Unless you are a full-on, full-blown, all eight cylinders banging sociopath, it is hard to live with knowledge that you are that evil. So go get them, Jude. Now, I said at the beginning of the program that this is a Mean People Suck Monday. You've seen that bumper sticker somewhere along the way. Mean people suck. And they do. You know, I think I told you, we went down and sat at a little information table at a street fair this past Saturday down in my hometown, just passing out information about mountaintop removal and what it's going to do to our community. And sure enough, my wife took the first shift. Agnes sat there, and she could charm the scales off a snake. Agnes could. But lo and behold, I get there and sit down, and what? I'm there for 10 minutes when a fiend of coal walks up. And we've got this big, blown-up, full-color panoramic photo of what they're doing to Gauley Mountain up above our town. And he points at it and says, "What is that?" I said, "That's what they're doing to our homes." "Well, I work in coal. I just got one question for you." You know, they blow up like a bullfrog. "I just got one question for you." "Yeah?" "Where are you from?" "About 2 miles from here. My people have only been here since 1745. Maybe we're new to the place compared to you, are we?" Oh. Because see, he was all ready with his outside agitator speech. Because that's all they got. "Some outside agitators are coming here and trying to ruin everything for all us. He's just making $60,000 a year tearing mountains down. These outside agitators." "Well, y'all trying to take my job." That's where Agnes kicked in, and she just smiled like sunshine and said, "No, honey, we're not trying to take your job. We just want a decent place to live." "Well, you're going to reclaim that and grow trees on it and stuff." Goes back over to me. "Well, you know, I can grow an oak tree and a plastic bucket for 10 years, but that doesn't mean it's going to survive if I plant it where there's no water and nowhere to sink a taproot. Why is it they have to plant non-native grasses up there? Where's the when you reclaim it, where do you put the ginseng? Where do you put the slippery elm? Where do you put the morels? Where do you put the ramps? Where do you put the bears, the deer, and the eagles, and the falcons? Where do you put them? Where do you keep them while you're doing what you're doing? And you know, it was interesting that once we got, once we took away y'all ain't from around here, he actually had to stand and engage in a conversation. And he was kind of slack-jawed when I said, how does it make you feel when you go to work to know that you're helping put enough mercury into the ecosystem to account for a 10-point IQ drop for every child your wife might have, or that your baby daughter or daughter-in-law or granddaughters might have? How does that make you feel, deliberately stupiding down your own people? Huh? Silence. And after this had gone on for maybe 10 minutes, he finally played his trump card. Well, it's that Obama. He's the one wrecked the economy. That's why we ain't mining coal now. And I just looked at him and said, now you just hold on a minute. This economy started going in the toilet last summer. Last I checked, Obama wasn't even elected till November and didn't take office till January the 20th. You want to blame somebody, blame the people who wrecked the economy. Now, the economy may still be a wreck, but he didn't wreck it. I don't even agree with a lot of what he's doing. See, that gets him. But you can't blame him for stuff George Bush and the Republican Party did. And that's when he had to turn around and didn't have another word to say and left. So that was our weekend. And a belated happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Mine was quiet, to say the very most. And frankly, Father's Days should be quiet. It's not a day for Dad to get out and, you know, go plow the South 40. Day of quiet relaxation. And mine was that. And I hope yours was as well. Happy Father's Day to all the dads. But it is, well, it is a Mean People Suck Monday. And we'll get into it shortly. Take a little break. Give the phones a chance to fill up. Again, you know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is the horn.
Black bear so lately did roam by the cool rushing waterfall, the wildflowers dream, and through every green valley there runs a clear stream. Now there's scenes of destruction on every hand, and only black waters run down through my land. Sad scenes of destruction on every hand. Black waters run down through my land. Well, the quail, she's a pretty bird and sings a sweet tongue. In the roots of tall timber, she nests with her young. Then the hillside explodes with the dynamite's roar, and the voices of the small birds is heard there no more. And the mountain comes a-sliding so awful and grand, and the flooding black waters rise over my land. Sad scenes of destruction on every hand. Black waters run down through my land. At the coming of springtime, we planted our corn. In the ending of springtime, we buried the sun. In the summer come a nice man saying everything's fine. My employer just requires a way to his mine. And they tore down my mountain and covered my corn. Now the grave on the hillside's a mile deeper down. And the man stands a-talking with his hat in his hand, while the poison black waters rise over my land. Sad scenes of destruction on every hand. Black waters run down to my land. Well, I ain't got no money, not much of a home. I own my own land, but my land's not my own. But if I had 10 million somewheres thereabout, well, I'd buy Perry County and I'd run them all out. And just sit down on the banks with my bait and my can, and watch the clear waters run down to my land. Well, wouldn't that be just like the old promised land? Black waters, no more in my land. Black waters, no more in my land.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Now you work inside all day long. When you come out, you hear that song. It's the coal miner boogie. 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 And you boogie boogie all night long. Oh,
make music like that no more.
No, they just don't. Coal Miner Boogie. And before that, Blackwater. Jim Ringer on Blackwater. But it's about 20 minutes before the hour. Let's get into the meat of the program, if you don't mind. I said it was a Mean People Suck Monday, and it really, really is. And let's start with the mean people. Why not? That kind of only makes sense. God knows why this guy, God, dog, flying spaghetti monster, whatever, knows why this guy is even on a television show. Again, it's another one of those former Republican congressmen. This one in particular being Tom Davis of Virginia. This happened on, this particular excerpt happened on C-SPAN's Washington Journal on Sunday, where Tom Davis fielded a call from a woman named Dorothy. Hear it for yourself. This is just stunning.
We'll go to Dorothy from Newport Richey, Florida. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning.
Hi,
I'd like to talk about health care. I'm in a predicament right now. I have diabetes. I've been shopping around. I'd like to retire at 62, and I'm having a difficult time. Most insurance companies, they reject me for having diabetes. They don't even want to accept me. Is that possible? They could get away with that? That seems like discriminating. I didn't ask to have diabetes or be sick, whatever.
You have adult, is it adult onset diabetes?
Yes.
Honest to God, like that matters. What if it was juvenile diabetes, Tom? What if it was Martian diabetes? I mean, that's nice that you know that there's two kinds, but really, in the grand scheme of the debate, what does it matter? Then again, he's a repiglick, and she wants to retire at 62? Hell no! She's working, people. She's supposed to work till she dies. And for-profit insurance can't be blamed for not wanting to insure her. They might have to spend money on taking care of her health. You know, health care. Insuring her health care. But that's not how for-profit health care makes money. For-profit health care makes money by denying coverage and refusing to cover people like Dorothy. Now, you heard Dorothy. Dorothy was much nicer than me. And she said, that sounds like discrimination. Well, Dorothy, it is discrimination, dear. It's institutionalized discrimination that is winked at and applauded even by the right wing because it's good. That's how the free market works. Hallelujah. Praise Jesus. But let's see what former congressman and current guest on C-SPAN, Tom Davis, has to say. Again, why is this creep on television? He's former. He's got nothing. He's not zips. But that's okay. If you're a former repiglick in anything, why, there's a spot on TV for you.
Type 2. I'm only on a pill. I try to watch my weight, my diet. I exercise. So they say they cannot accept me.
This poor woman. She's trying to justify her very existence to a former Republican congressman. My God. Listen to us. Listen to us. We are literally begging for scraps from the table. Begging. So that we might be able to retire at 62 or 65 and not spend what remains of our lives in misery and degradation and shame and poverty. Well, let's hear where that pro-family Republican Tom Davis wants to go with all this.
I'm not asking for free. I'm willing to go up to a certain amount per month that I could afford. And I'm having a difficult time. I don't know, the people in Congress, the people in the Senate, they don't have a problem. We put them there. They are set for life with their insurance.
Well, Dorothy, let me ask you, there's a story this morning, front page in the New York Times, a new CBS News New York Times poll, that says two things. First of all, 85% of those respondents said that the healthcare system needed to be fundamentally changed. 77% said that they were very or somewhat satisfied with the quality of their own care.
Yes, but, well, I don't know where they get those numbers from. I talk to many people. I work in retail, and I'm in contact with, customers, and I speak to them about it on the side. I hear them comments about health care. And no one is satisfied.
Well, Dorothy, let me say a couple things.
Okay, here we go. This is the compassionate response. Dare I say the empathetic response of former Republican Congressman Tom Davis of Virginia.
First of all, I understand the dilemma you're in. I don't know if you'll be able to retire at 62 or not, frankly.
Do you, Tom? Do you understand the dilemma she's in? Because, see, Tom, you're an ex-Republican congressman, and you were there long enough to vest. You've got the best socialized medicine that the people of the United States can provide you. You don't understand, Tom Davis. Don't lie. God will send you to hell for lying, Tom. I mean, I'm sure you're some sort of religious fanatic. You're a Republican. You ought to know better. I understand. I don't know if you'll be able to retire at 62. Well, she can't, Tom. Then there's something fundamentally wrong with this country. There's something fundamentally wrong with this country that you helped bring on to this country.
I mean, all of our 401ks are down. I wish I could retire at 62. I think you're going to find Americans working longer.
My God. The man's got a pension. The man's got a congressional pension. He makes the long walk to the mailbox once a month. He's in the clear. He wishes he could retire at 62. Retire from what, Tom? What kind of cushy lobbying job did you get coming out of Congress, Tom?
Than they had originally anticipated, given the economic downturn and some of the economic realities. If you can find a job with a major employer, then they're not going to be able to reject you under those cases. I don't think you'll probably be able to find some health insurance, but if it's with a small business or you're going out on your own, it's difficult at this point. There may be a government plan or private plans that are mandated coming out of this that may be able to help you. But diabetes, particularly adult onset, is controllable if you watch your weight, if you exercise.
When is she supposed to do that? Tom, she's already told you that she works for retail. That is some brutal, foot sore, aching leg, wear out work. It's more than you could stand for 8 hours of your life, Tom. You know, if you've got plenty of money, it's easy to eat right. But if you don't, you catch as catch can and you catch it on the fly. I wonder if at Dorothy's retail job, Tom, I wonder if she has a break room with a treadmill in it where she can, take an hour for lunch and 30 minutes of that spend on the treadmill so that she can get plenty of exercise, Tom. The But do you hear that? That's the way Republicans act. Well, you know, it's treatable. It can be managed. So what he's essentially saying is that this is somehow Dorothy's fault, when in fact diabetes has a genetic component. But then again, maybe he believes that Adam and Eve rode their dinosaur to church on Sundays, and that evolution-based genetic science is just a bunch of demonology. I don't know about Tom Davis.
Watch what you eat, continue, I guess, in this case, to take your medication. And I don't know any reason why you shouldn't be able to find something out there, but you want to look for an important...
How's she going to get the medication, Tom? She is not young. She'd like to retire at 62. I don't think she's going to be able to sell it on the street corner, Tom, to make the money for her prescriptions. No, I was not trying to be cruel or sexist about that, with that quip. But that's how Republicans are. Well, just go out and take part in the miracle of the free market. Tom, do you have any idea what employer-provided health care costs in retail? Jesus, there's a reason why Walmart has seminars for its workers to teach them how to take advantage of every penny of the welfare system that is available to them. Because they are so poorly paid and so pathetically benefited. But all she needs to do is eat three healthy meals a day that includes the Cheerios, a part of this balanced breakfast. And take her pill. Well, where's the problem?
That has a health care plan. And good luck.
There you go. Good luck. There it is. Right there, front and center for you. The right wing's answer to the health care crisis in America. Good luck.
You dick!
Yeah. Good luck. But that's what they've got, the pig-licking party. Good luck. Here's an apple and a roadmap. Good luck. Hope you make it to 62, Dorothy. Hope you make it to 65 and then die before you start taking that Social Security. Could you do that for us, Dorothy? Mean people suck. And there's another side of the mean people suck the subject topic. But we'll save that. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I wasn't going to call when you started talking about that subject on the health. I've been watching a lot of the hearings on that, mostly the Senate, and last night I saw some on the on that same subject. They had three different people on last night that were testifying about their insurance that they got, the kind that you get, you know, that's not with the company you work.
Right.
And every one of them, they had to fill out a form to tell their history, their medical history, and they said it was very complicated. Make a long story short, of course, after they got sick, every one of them, and seriously, the insurance dropped them because they weren't honest in their application. And, they would investigate them. They found just the least little thing, you know, least little excuse to drop them. One woman had breast cancer, And another one, her brother, she was there for her brother, and he had lymphoma. I mean, Hodgkin, kind of Hodgkin's. And then the other girl, she had hypothyroidism. And they said there's somebody that works at those, and most of these people were with Blue Cross. And there's people that work there that just go through their records and anything they can find as an excuse to drop them. So this is what, not only does it cost a fortune to get private insurance, if you can get it, but I saw that Tom was going to be on, and I don't like him, so I didn't watch the show. I'm glad I didn't, because I would have been very upset.
Oh, I mean, does that make your blood boil the way it does mine?
Yes, it does.
Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, our buddy David in Tennessee reminds me, he said, I'm waiting for him to tell her to pray her way out of her disease. He is, after all,
yeah,
a Christian Scientist.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he told her to take her pill.
Well, you know, in James it says something about if you tell someone, you know, God, somebody's in duress or something or is hungry or whatever, and you tell them Godspeed, you haven't done a thing for them. And that's in the Bible.
I forgot about that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. I've got it somewhere. I was trying to look it up. But anyway, it's in the book of James. But anyhow, I've been watching those, mostly the Senate hearings. And, but to get back to the House of Representatives hearing, there's a couple of doctors on that committee that one of them was a OBGYN, and they're both Republicans, and they said to the women, you know, that were there, and they said, well, you really don't want the government to take over everything, do you? And the one of them said, they all of them said, you know, I don't know, but said this, our medical program is crippled, and something needs to be done. I can't tell you. Said, you're the ones that's supposed to know or whatever. And, you know, that was cold to me. And then the other one said, well, did you go to the county? Did you do this? Did you do that? Well, these people did everything to try to get help. And one woman helped her brother out. She happened to be a lawyer, so she was able to fight for him. And he lived, like, after he got the treatments and all, he lived 3 years, you know, happy 3 years. And, I mean, he couldn't work or anything. He was in the restaurant business, and he had all this insurance he'd been paying on for years and years and years. But that's how it goes with private insurance. And when they say that they want to give people $5,000, some of them even less, you can't buy insurance for that. You can't even buy insurance where you work down here. The last job I had, I couldn't buy it because I would have had to pay over what I was making to pay for the insurance. And I do know one woman that's what she did. She was married, and she worked just to pay for insurance. But, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But they're the ones that are really the ones that are private. If you have problems, they're going to try to find everything they can to keep you from having to pay for it.
Well, Juanita, it's maddening, isn't it?
It is maddening.
I mean, it removes from me my ability to speak. Because the answer seems so relatively simple, and I look for simple answers. And the simple answer in this case is universal single-payer health care.
Yeah.
The insurance companies have had their chance. How many more chances do we give them?
I know. And one of the women, the one that had the breast cancer, she tried to get into the county, and they told her she was on a waiting list. Because she finally did get insurance. She got help from one of the congressmen who did happen to be a Republican. Joe Barton did help her out. But anyway, she got another insurance, and she finally had her surgery. But she was on a waiting list, and every time she would call, they'd lose her chart. So she said, I don't think I would have ever been called to have surgery at the county. Well, down where I live, we used to have a county hospital. We had one for years and years and years. And for a long time, they weren't the greatest. But about 20 years ago, they started. They were better than the local hospitals. They were just got where they were just wonderful. Because I became a patient down there. That's the reason I know. And, you know, they were kinder to you. And I had surgery down there a couple of times. And it was just, they were just absolutely wonderful. And, but our commissioners, in all their wisdom, decided to cut the thing out about, I guess it's been about 5 years ago. So we don't even have a county hospital now. And it was a wonderful hospital.
But it wasn't doing the insurance companies any particular good.
I suppose not.
Or more particularly, it wasn't doing the hospital for-profit corporations any good.
Yeah, we had the one hospital here in our county that tried to take over all hospitals, in almost all of them in this county, and they did take over a lot of them. Back in the 80s, you know, when we had all that problem, when they changed Medicare, when they did all that stuff, you know, where you have to have the right code, and they pay so much for each hospital stay, and they can get you, they want to get you out as quick as they can, so they make more money. You know about that.
Yes.
I forget what you call it. It's been a while since I fooled with it. But they need to go back to the way Medicare was when it first started, where the doctors were the ones that had to say so. What they started back in the early 80s was they claimed they were going to get rid of the bad doctors. Well, what they did, they got rid of a lot of the good doctors because the bad doctors played the game. And the good doctors, they wanted to treat their patients correctly. You know, they wanted to treat them right. They didn't want to play the game. And you know, so this has been ongoing since back then. And they talk about the money that they have to pay for insurance. That's been going on, too, for a long time. It didn't just start. I know a doctor from Germany. He was the anesthesiologist where I worked, and he was so wonderful. And he had to go back to Germany because he couldn't afford the insurance. Well, they could do something about that if they wanted to. No, what they want to do is take away our rights to sue if we have a bad doctor. They want to take away that right. They can sue anytime they want to.
Sure they can.
But not us little people. We're not supposed to have that right. They've been trying to take that right away for long, long years, too. They've had it up. We've had it up in our Congress here in Florida, you know, for quite a while. But anyway, I just wanted to go back and say something about the Senate hearing. You know, they had presented like over 100 amendments, mostly the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was Senator Dowd, he took over the hearings from Kennedy because Kennedy's not able to. And so he let the people have their say. Well, some of the Democrats were absolutely wonderful. And the new senator from, Oregon were, Susie Liz?
Susan and Jean, yeah, they're from Oregon.
Yeah, the new senator. He was magnificent. And even the guy from Pennsylvania, he brought out the Christian aspect of it and said, we're it's waiting to see what we're going to do for the people. But they brought up all these things. And, of course, the Republicans, it was money, money, money. this is money, money, money. And the last hearing I saw, McCain is on the that committee. He showed himself big time. He told Dowd, he said, "This is just a waste of time. You should have had everything ready. When I have something to do, I get everything ready and prepared, you know." Well, he was taking over a committee he didn't have, and he was trying to get all of it. And he finally said, Dowd finally said, "You know," he said, "I'm about to feel like I'm being taken advantage of." And he said, "I'm not going to be taken advantage of." And the one Republican that sat by him, an older guy, he said, "Well, do you think that's what we're doing?" He said, "I haven't got there yet," but he said, "I'm very close." Because a lot of the things were just repeats, some of the on the amendments, and some of them were just about one word, you know, changing one word, and they just go on and on and on. So, but I was really proud of some of our Democratic senators on that committee. They were magnificent. God only knows what's going to happen. But the main thing is if they get the public option.
Well, but see, I understand the importance of the public option. I really, really do. But Juanita, it scares me because that public option is a Trojan horse for continued for-profit interference with our health care system.
Well, I know it ain't what it should be, but if we don't have that,
it's got to be there, but it's got to be made as strong and as impervious to the efforts of the for-profit illness industry as we can possibly make it, and that's why those the efforts to fight back, those efforts to change one word, just one word, like you were talking about, are so important.
I don't know. A lot of them are, I think, this another thing they want to do. They don't want to get it done. They're, it says it's getting done too quick, and they need more time. You know, how he said that he wants it done, how the president said he wants it done in a certain amount of time. And they're trying to get it to, you know, have more time so they have more time to really get it right, you know, which is never.
Right.
If we go by the past.
Yeah, again, it's one of those all deliberate speed moments. You remember that phrase from Brown versus Board of Education? The state should move with all deliberate speed, and then you turn around and you go and you look at the definition of deliberate, and it means slow.
Yeah.
See, the Republicans, you know, they're not dummies. They know how to fight a war. They've got fallback trenches. They'll take a beating and fall back and fall back and fall back.
One was saying, "Well, you know, we try to do this as liberal as we could. Much as I hate to say that word, we try to be as liberal as we could with this amendment. You know, just dig, 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 dig." But anyway, it's really been fascinating. I haven't seen the whole entire thing. I mean, I've seen them, you know, like late at night after they're over. But they're extremely interesting. If anybody, and that guy from, was he from Virginia, the one that Tom?
Yeah, guy? Tom Davis, right.
Yeah. He's something else. But, yeah, I remember him when he was in college. Yeah, him saying, "I wish I could retire." Buddy, I bet you he could retire right now pretty easily. But you're probably right. He's probably going to be in that.
Well, he's double dipping right now. If he's actually working for a living by whatever means former Republican congressman defines work, then he's double dipping because he's getting a paycheck and his congressional pension. And that congressional pension is nothing to sneeze at.
No, and the insurance. I think that if we don't get coverage, I don't think they should have it. Why are they better than we are? They're saying it's because they're federal employees. Well, you know what? Maybe the federal employees ought to cut down like the union people did in Detroit. Cut back on their stuff. Am I elbowing about that?
No. No, you're not.
Don't that make sense?
I'm
not wishing them anything on
our buddy Benedict in the chat room says, we let the public option end, and I will promise you that every insurance company rejection will end in that pool, and the GOP will then run around saying, see, we told you the government can't do anything right.
Oh, yeah, of course. But they're just, the one thing the Brown guy, the guy from, the senator from Ohio, the younger guy.
Yeah, Sherrod Brown.
Yeah, Sherrod. He brought up about, you know, this is, we've been talking about this since Truman's time. You know, he brought up a good history on the situation. He was another good one. I really enjoyed some of them that talked. And
well, yeah, see, I mentioned it a couple of times. Once upon Agnes goes through the discarded books, and the idea of books being discarded is just a horror to me. But she'll go to the public library, and there'll be books that are being discarded. And,
oh, yeah.
And she found one that was a collection of some famous editorial cartoonist's work that extended back into the late 40s, up into the early 50s, and the Kennedy administration in the 60s and so forth. And lo and behold, I was thumbing through it, and I just felt like I'd been hit with a wet fish, just smacked, because lo and behold, there were editorial cartoons that showed Dwight D. Eisenhower as president saying that we can't have national health care because because it would be bad for business and it was socialism.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's 1952, 53, 54.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how long this discussion's been going on. And, you know, at what point do the American people look up and say, enough, enough is enough?
Right.
We've tried it their way. We have tried it their way, Juanita, for two solid generations, if not three.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't gotten it right, and they've gotten it manifestly wrong, and they have left a road of bones and a river of tears in their wake. And at what point do the American people say, we will not allow you to treat us like that anymore?
Right. Yeah, we need to do what the Iranians are doing. We need to do, and I'm so happy about what y'all are going to do tomorrow, and I hope I get to hear it on the radio.
I hope we get to get you to hear it.
Yeah,
it's going to take a little bit of luck to make it all work.
Yeah, well, I'll say Godspeed, so I'll hand that to you too.
Okay, and I know, yeah, and you're not doing it like.
And you know that's my heart.
Yes, I know. I do.
I mean it.
I know.
But anyway, I've really been interested. And I'm going to tell you, we've been having so much daggum car trouble, you wouldn't believe.
Well, I think it's catching.
You know the same thing.
I think it's catching because I had an email from Peter Godbold. He's been having car trouble. You've been having car trouble. I got car trouble.
I got car trouble. You got car trouble.
All God's children got car trouble. That's right.
And I was looking at the new clunker program, you know, and I was trying to see if maybe get something on that. But you got to get a brand new. And
yeah, because that's going to happen. You know, it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating for me. I went over to. Oh, by the way, I got to tell a little story because I know you like to keep up with Ferg and his doings.
Yeah, I do. I love Ferg.
He has been. He got a phone call the other day. And, yes, this is him, he says. Well, you know, he's coming into eighth grade. He'll be an eighth grader next fall.
Uh-huh.
Well, lo and behold, he's been invited to be part of the marching drum corps for the high school up here, and him not even in high school yet.
Mm-hmm.
So he's feeling pretty tickled about that. That's why he's not working tonight. He's up at this organizational meeting, and I guess he's going to – John Fox would be so proud. I know John's listening right now, so
yeah.
There it is in the chat room. Yay, Ferg.
Yeah, you tell him I'm so proud of him.
I guess he's going to play the four tom, the little four drums that you wear around your neck, and yeah.
And, you know, I like to hear him laughing and talking while you're on the air. I enjoy that.
Oh, is this a Bob back off the boy moment?
Well, he's just he adds to the program, I think.
He does. I can't let it go to his head though, because then he'll become unbearable. He is, after all, Juanita, my son.
Yeah.
And the apple falleth not far from the tree.
Yeah. Well, that's good. We need another Bob.
Yeah, I think you're going to get one.
There's not too many of you around.
Oh, dear God, I think you're going to get one, Juanita, and if you only knew how frightening that was.
Because you know the tale behind the story, huh?
Yeah, well, exactly. Juanita, good talking to you.
I'm still working on my plants.
Well, nothing happening yet?
Well, my tomato plants are still teeny. I put some stuff on, but we're having such hot weather down here. I can't water them during the daytime. I mean, we're having like close to 100, but it feels like over 100. Like today is supposed to be 99, the temperature. And it's just so blamed hot outside.
Well, I've been hearing that. I know my sister lives down in Mobile, Alabama.
Uh-huh.
And she's been telling me it's blistering down there, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, here it is just mid-June or third week of
June.
Well,
my stuff was doing great when we had that rain, but I hate for other people. You know, they were flooded, but, you know, need some rain every once in a while.
A little bit.
It'll look like it's going to, but then it doesn't.
Well, I tell you what, cross your fingers for no rain up here tomorrow. I just have this thing about sitting next to electrical equipment in rainstorms.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I would love to be a fly on the wall.
Well, you will be. You will be.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Take care, Juanita.
Okay. You too.
Bye now.
Good night.
Calling from Central Florida, our View correspondent, Juanita. And I was surprised she didn't bring up Lewis Black being on The View last week. And let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Peter.
Peter?
Peter, you mentioned...
I said your name and you called. This is getting spooky.
Well, Bob, you see, even though I'm MIA, I do, like, I stealth listen. I do stealth listen. often I can only do it at, like, 8K, even though I'm paying premium prices for, you know, the high-speed broadband. I'm often doing it at 8K, but at least I do listen occasionally the days that works. And then there's sometimes the Internet really perks up and things are going well. In any case, that's personal problems, long story. Should be fixed by August. But, gee, you know, I'm having a fairly good Internet hair day, and I went to the home, and you've got, like, a toolbar, dude. I'm, like, totally outclassed.
Oh, John and Sue have just been going bananas on the website, and it's looking better and better all the time.
It's gorgeous. I couldn't believe it. So I clicked on it immediately. I've got a head-on radio network toolbar, and it's got a little player in it, little features here and there. I don't know what they all do yet, but I thought, how cool. You know, you've arrived when you have a toolbar. I mean, MSN has got a freaking toolbar. Google's got a toolbar. Who are those idiots? Ask Jeeves. They're like the low-class toolbar. They've got a toolbar out there. And, you know, there's not many people that have a toolbar. Who came up with this idea?
I think that's John's doings and then a collaborative. It's amazing to see what he and Sue are doing.
Sue's getting more dangerous than her old age.
By the minute.
Did the network buy her a laptop yet? Are we working on it?
She has a laptop. We weren't able to buy her one, but we did point her to a very good bargain.
I'm so thrilled. If anybody needed a powerful laptop device, she did. I miss you guys.
Well, the chat room is absolutely losing its mind, Peter.
Oh, dear Lord.
Oh, there's mirror balls flashing, and you're dancing in your white disco suit.
Oh, Lord. Those were the days.
The dancing banana is out.
Well, let me tell you, I may have been missing in action, but our friend Glenn Rivera, the executive director of Talent Booking, honey, he hasn't slept a wink. Every time I turn around, the phone is ringing, and he's got some incredible act that wants to be on this show as soon as it comes back on the air. I could do 2 months of just music shows. I'm hoping to come back, guys. I mean, you know,
Well, we are sending threatening letters to Embark and so forth, that trying to get you back.
Well, they're actually stringing fiber optic out here to our little telephone building, and that was the problem all along. They ran T1 lines out to the phone building, and maximum capacity was 12 gig or 12 meg. I don't know. I forget. But in any case, they put over 120 subscribers and immediately overloaded it and oversold it, so it pretty much crashed.
And next thing you know, you're paying $60 a month for dial-up.
Well, yeah. Pretty much, yeah. And I didn't want to drop it because I then would have no leg to complain on. So anyway, we did end up with Public Service Commission, even though Public Service Commission doesn't technically regulate Embark. Public Service Commission has a close relationship with Embark in other areas, and we got to get a PSC guy that wasn't particularly fond of Embark who could apply pressure to Embark in other areas, and Embark knew this.
Is that kind of like when your head's hurting, it makes you feel better when you step on somebody's foot?
Yeah.
So he stomped Embark's toes?
Yeah. And the other big news, Bob, is they're paving Godbold Road. And I have questions.
No. You continue have you. Then you got to move, because you have to live down a little dirt road in Florida.
Well, it's a little dirt road from the new will be paved to the little house in the back of the old house. So I technically have a little dirt path, but it's a shame. I can understand it. It costs so much for the county to maintain these unsurfaced roads. You know, rocks and grading, and the rain makes it all wash away. You know the deal. But so we're going to get some kind of pavement on it, and machines are out there going back and forth and helping with talking.
Drag racing Saturday night on Godbold Road.
In other words, darling, I may have to take a cab to the gate park across the street.
Oh dear God! they'll have to paint you a crosswalk.
Well, I hope
in pink.
So. Wouldn't that be funny? And it could play some little disco tune rather than that tweet tweet for visually impaired people. I'll pick it out. I'm sure Glenn will, one or the other. So, anyway, guys, I'm still alive. They haven't killed me yet, and I know I'm in stealth, and I've been in stealth for probably over a year or at a year anyway, but hopefully soon, good Lord willing, and Bob and Agnes, under their good graces, hope to come back.
Oh, we can't wait. We absolutely can't wait. You know, we're hanging on for dear life and everything, Peter, but there are big doings afoot. You know, with us being the exclusive streaming content provider for all the meetings at Netroots Nation in August and everything in Pittsburgh.
Netroots is huge.
Yeah, it is.
Even I know about it. You know, I've been out of the loop, and I know about it.
It's mammoth, and every word that is spoken there will be carried on the horn stream for anyone that wants to listen to.
Well, I think that's wonderful. Will they have their own time slot?
Well, no. This is going to be like work. Get up at 7 o'clock, go down. Meetings start at 9 or whatever, and we run. We dig this, Peter. You want a challenge? The poor Ben Birch is pulling his hair out.
Haven't killed Ben yet.
No. But he has been pricing. Never mind.
yeah.
But no, we're going to be running 5 separate streams at the same time.
Is that possible?
Yes.
Good
Ben,
Lord.
All things are possible through Ben,
well, this
who strengthens us.
More sources than whatever the Nova people had and the Air America people had. And
right, because the way it's been explained to me, there will be 5 rooms at the convention center, and there will be panels, boom, 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 going through each room.
Do we have enough computers for that?
We have just enough computers for that, and maybe one for breakdowns.
Dude.
We're sweating mixers, frankly.
Dude. That even horrifies me, and I can handle almost anything, but that even scares us.
And, you know, with Radio Shack charging $10 a cord, that's going to get a little exciting, too.
You know, they make a huge margin on those cords. They still love this. Nothing they sell comes with a cord. They sell the hell out of this.
And it's gold-plated.
Oh, yeah, and it's just so silly. It's just like gold.
You can lick the gold off of it.
As if. Oh, man, Radio Shack.
Yeah, but it's going to be really exciting. And, in fact, maybe you'll have service by then, and you can sort of be a remote part of it, and we can have all, because there's bound to be an LGBT forum.
Well, I certainly hope so, and I would love to be involved in that. The way it is now is that things will be cruising along nicely on a connection, and suddenly I would just be gone. And then, you know, I would come back and maybe after redialing and I'd be gone. And it's totally unreliable.
And it's maddening.
And it's maddening, and it happens mostly during what was my old time slot, and I just...
Because that's when everybody gets home and gets on the computer.
Yeah, and that was just the point where I said, Bob, I can't take it anymore, and went and hid in the closet for 6 months. But it was
you and Doggy.
Not to redecorate the whole bit.
Yeah. But,
listen, just for the people out there that know about Larry, Larry's father passed. He passed a couple of weeks ago, and there was a wonderful service for his father, and Larry is still in Detroit. He's looking after his mother as best he can. His mom has Alzheimer's, but she's hanging in there. And sometimes Alzheimer's is a little bit of a blessing because she can't remember that her partner of 80 years is gone long enough for it to really sink in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So anyway, Larry's still out there, and I'm still out here, and I miss you guys.
Well, it is obvious in the chat room that you were very much missed, and we just, you know, we look forward to things getting normal and, well, not normal, but something approaching predictable on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
There. We're not egomaniacs. We'll aim for predictable.
Listen, when you get a chance to talk to John, tell him kudos on, and Sue, too, kudos on that toolbar. Way to go, guys.
Oh, they're listening. They're hearing every word.
Okay.
You know, John Fox says, come back soon, my brother. The whole chat, yeah, you are very much missed.
Thank you.
And so when things get back to predictable, you know, you've got all the equipment there. You just have to take out a can of dust off and blow the dust off of it, and
there you go.
And
in fact, this fiber is real. There are trucks actually out on the main road now stringing the fiber, and we see the big fat fiber cables and the little amplifiers and the whole bit, so it's real. We're talking about maybe off. So that's all I know.
Well, that's wonderful. And, I took your name in vain because Juanita was talking about car troubles, and apparently that is contagious, and she's caught it.
And not only was there real valid problems, like I needed new brakes and two new tires, I had to have the AC repaired because it's been 100 every day this week except for 2 days where it was 101 and the other was 102. It's unbelievable. I grew up down here. I've never seen the heat like this early.
Yeah, so it's not like, it's not like you just came down there and you're surprised how warm it is.
No. AC is survival now. It's just unbelievable.
And, I mean, any let-up? Is this just a freak heat wave, or is this...
We have seen temperatures probably in the hundreds next week, too. None of us know what to make of it, quite frankly. It's hot, and dry.
Well, by the time August comes around, Peter, you'll be able to take your gallon pickle jug out with the tea bags in it and boil your sun tea.
Well, the blessing is the air conditioning in this new little place that I have works well, and it has some ceiling fans, so life is good.
And so Miss Doggy doesn't have to just sit and pant in the
no,
right.
She has much more room now. She actually sleeps on a queen size bed comforter, not on a queen size bed, just the comforter. Now there's room to unfold the comforter the whole way, so she has much. Is this just marvelous?
Oh, she is living in doggy opulence.
Yeah, she's under the ceiling fan. She's happy.
Well, Peter, so good to hear from you.
You too. Good to talk to you, and hugs to Agnes and Ferg and the whole gang.
All right. I'll pass them along. They'll be tickled to hear.
Yes, sir. Bye, Bob.
Bye, Peter. The once and future world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold. You know, it's terrible. It's terrible when the technology by which one exists takes one out. So I can't wait until they get the fiber strung to Peter's mansion in the sun there, and we get to start hearing back from something, because I have no doubt that Glenn Rivera has an absolute 2-year backlog of folks that are ready to come out and talk about some wonderful music. And of course, Peter was at his absolute best as well when he was bringing out issues that might otherwise have gone unreported on the rest of the horn. When Strictly Confidential was running for the year that it ran. It was. And there still isn't a five-night-a-week LGBT conversation program. There just isn't one. And it was part of the mission that that the Horn was fulfilling, and one which I look forward to us fulfilling again, because the value of getting everybody talking, and taking, you know, we've talked about closing the gap and ending isolation, and the more that we realize that, you know, whether it's the LGBT community, the environmental community, the women's rights community, the labor community, the more that we realize that the only reason we don't realize we all speak the same language is because we haven't been talking. And once we do start talking, heaven help the right wing. They really will run off to a mental hospital, like Bill Maher said. And it all happens here on the Horn, because nobody else is doing it. And you're the ones who make that happen. And that is what makes this effort worthwhile each and every day, is the dogged determination of the people who financially contribute to the program to make sure that the program is there for everyone who wants to hear it. It is simply amazing to me. Now, of course, if you want to be part of that process, there's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. There's also the snail mail address. You can use either one. It all sort of winds up going to the same place, and that is keeping this all going. Let's go back to the phones and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Boy, it is getting warm. It is definitely getting warm out. I had to turn on my air conditioning way up here in the tundra. Yeah.
You mean you've gone from sleet and hail and freezing June into immediate the blistering heat?
Yeah, and muggy. I mean, thick. I don't even need to drink water. I just breathe. It's getting up there. Well, we got two sunspots right now. We haven't had two sunspots for quite a while, and yeah, get ready for the heat, people. The sun's entering its new cycle, and it's going full bore. So, yay, we'll start seeing global warming talk again real soon. So anyhow, I tell you, the website is looking fantabulous. And, you know, I'll tell you what, the people in Iran, they're impressing me too. They're doing, I think, exactly what we all need to be doing. And I think they're doing exactly what needs to be done. When you got a regime like that, you know, isn't this always the downfall of every revolution? It's like they stop and try to clean up, and then they never take another step forward. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that they don't do anything positive, but for the most part, it just becomes some sort of dictatorship, totalitarian regime. I mean, we see it in Cuba. We saw it in Vietnam. We see it, you know, I mean, look at North Korea. I mean, every time there's a revolution, it's like, and seen it in Iran, you know, and
well, you know, look, I think it's natural, Albert. Revolution is good as long as it's your revolution, but once your revolution is over and you become the government, have you noticed that they all, for instance, there's still a revolutionary council in Iran? Revolution's
exactly.
Over. You know, it's still it's for good or ill, it's still a revolutionary government in Cuba. You know, come on, Cuba.
Hey,
you're the government now.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with, you know, getting a revolution, and as long as you move it into evolution, you know, you got to take the R off after you're done.
Yeah.
And turn it into evolution.
Yeah, don't forget. That's good. That's good. Don't forget to take the R off.
Yeah, don't forget to take the R off. I mean, you know, and speaking of R's and what you just had mentioned with Bill Maher, you know, yeah, they're already in the asylum. And, you know, we need to push the Democrats back to the left, or at least back on the road somewhere. My goodness. You know, you got Dianne Feinstein, who's, you know, never seen a buck. She didn't want to, you know, a military war buck that she didn't want to spend, send to her husband's company. You know, and I can't say the woman's never done anything halfway decent, but I could tell you another thing. When I think of her, I don't think of her for the halfway decent things she does. I think of her for the times where she's always stepping on our throats. You know, I see just like, you know, just like shooting protesters and shooting young women in the face in Iran is going to be the death knell of their, you know, of them holding power. You know, us doing these things and, you know, trying to continue this cannibalistic party of our healthcare system is going to be the death knell for our political, you know, parties and such and so on and so forth. I mean, who just did Washington Times or New York Times, one of these times, they just did this, you know, survey and, you know, 77% of Americans want single-payer healthcare now. 77%. Nobody's buying the, you know, the propaganda machine of, you know, little ladies with, you know, earpieces and, you know, there to help you and, you know, all these other filthy, disgusting, horrible things about dealing with today's, you know, medical industry. Nobody wants that. I think everybody I speak
to. Yeah, but check out this headline. I'm just looking over at Crooks and Liars, Albert.
Mm-hmm.
Dianne Feinstein, quote, "I don't know if Obama has the votes for health care right now."
Yeah. Well,
and the American people, 70%. I think that's the votes for healthcare. The deafness of especially members of the Senate. That's not Obama's problem. Although, you know, the fact that Obama is not out there absolutely beating the bushes, for single payer is distressing.
It is, but he's letting us make the noise.
Sure.
You know, and I mean, and that's maybe one thing we can say, at least, you know, I mean, if you gave Dianne Feinstein and President Not Sure each a surfboard and hit the waves, I'll tell you what, Barack would stand before she did. You know, so, and I think it's the same deal here. Sure, she's got a power base, and it's all that moneyed power base. It's all the, you know, the people in with their Goldman Sachs, you know, that root for Goldman Sachs giving up pension bonuses and everything else these freaks are doing. You know, I think the American people are so fed up and so sick and tired of that, you know. And the one thing about us is one thing that's nice about America, you know, that maybe other countries, you know, don't have as much, is when we start to move, we're fast. I think we can do things pretty quickly. And, you know, if you're a bad guy, you're done. You know, and if you get exposed to be a bad guy, you're done. I know you got your heroes and such and so on and so forth, but look at what's happened to David Letterman. You know, they try to drum up this AstroTurf, you know, bull crap against him for a joke. Nobody's, who the hell's buying
for,
it?
Now let's clarify that real quick, okay, before we slide right past it. For a joke about Alex Rodriguez. Okay, I don't mean to put too fine a point on it, Albert, but a joke about Alex Rodriguez. I mean, I'm not a funny guy, but I do understand a little bit about comic timing and comic delivery, and I can tell who a joke is about, and I didn't get a ring out of my Wheaties or anything to be able to tell it. It was a joke about Alex Rodriguez that Little Miss Publicity turned into a thing. Oh, look, it's about me. It's all about me. Global warming, it's about me.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Alex Rodriguez is a horn dog, it's all about me. You know, God, it's like the other side of some dumbass pop country song. I want to talk about me, big guy. Yeah. Well, that's Sarah Palin's theme song.
Yes, sir. I mean, and you know, I mean, how quickly the right wingers forget the things they say in that class of entertainment. You know, I mean, heck, I don't think I've heard a right winger say something funny. I can't even think of something I've heard that's one of them has said that's made me laugh. You know, even when they, you know, even when they're trying to be funny, they just come across mean and spiteful and just, you know, bitter and, you know, ugly. I mean, they're ridiculous. And, you know, I mean, how can any of them ever throw a stone? You know, they're living in, you know, 50% lead crystal houses, and, I mean, they got, you know, sledgehammers for hands and feet and butt cheeks. I mean, these guys are, you know, just swinging around, just breaking their entire ramshackle house down. I don't see these people doing anything worthy of anything. And I'll tell you, you know, the solstice is here, the sun is shining, and I hope it's going in a positive direction. I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to see this thing in Iran resolved beyond our wildest dreams. You know, I'd love to see that kind of thing. I know that's hopeful and stuff, but you got to be hopeful in these dark hours when, you know, people are getting shot by their own government. You know,
the woman who has become the face of this uprising was shot by a militia sniper. Okay, did you pick up on that, Albert?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, she was shot by a Basiji sniper, which is a volunteer paramilitary militia force of longstanding and profound right-wing conservative roots, all right? There is not a dime's worth of difference between the sniper who shot Nada and the guy who walked into the Holocaust Museum a week ago, or the guy who walked into the Tennessee Unitarian Universalist Church a year ago.
Or the guy who shot Dr. Tiller.
Or the guy who shot Dr. Tiller. Or the guy who... The list is endless, almost. They come with the absolutely minimal difference of two extremely toxically fundamentalist versions of different faiths. Everything else is the same.
And, you know, you can even make the argument that the religion is the same. It's, you know, still Abrahamic, you know, it's just part three. One's part three, one part's two. You know, I mean... Yeah,
yeah, truly a case where the sequels are worse than the original.
How good was the original to begin with? It's almost like these movies you just...
Well, I know, the original was a B-movie to begin with. But oh boy, I'm going to get myself in trouble. News Ninja Susan sent me a link the other day that was really fascinating. It looked like it hadn't been updated in a while, but I don't necessarily think that it needs to, called evilbible.com.
Mm.
And it is a brilliant cataloging of all the nastiness inside the Bible.
Mm.
You know, with the incest and rape and pillage and murder and genocide and all that holy stuff. And Jesus telling men to go out and, you know, whack off the, I don't mean whack, I mean, what, eunuchize themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. You know, and just catalogs all of it.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean.
So, you know, you're right. It's these are variations on a theme.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I love it when they argue their differences because they just look the same to me anyway. You know, these guys are...
Well, like, you know, you look at a Southern Baptist, how do you feel about a state like Alabama, how do you feel about having a statewide lottery? Bible's against it, and I'm a Christian, and I'm against the gambling. Really? You're against the gambling? So are the Muslims. How do you feel about drinking? I don't think it should even be allowed to sell beer and liquor and wine in this state. It's against God's commandments. Really, you're against booze. How about that? The Muslims are against booze, too.
Yep.
And they got more in common than they got separating them.
Yes, sir.
And if they ever figure that out, we're screwed.
Yeah, well, I saw an interesting documentary, a couple of them. Actually, I saw an interesting documentary on the Netflix. It's Eco Trip, and they talked about the light bulb and... You know, and you know, it's one of those things when you're paying attention to anything, you know, any kind of religious documentary, drug war documentary, you know, you'll sit there a lot of times screaming at the TV, like, talk about this, talk about this. Well, you know, he was talking about those compact fluorescents, and, you know, I got problems with that because, you know, it does use a lot of mercury. You don't want to break them in your house, people, and you don't want to just throw them in the landfill. There's mercury in those things, and, well, mercury's good for reading, ain't it? You know, well, they went in and they were talking about that light bulb, and, you know, they went to the Con Ed people and they're talking to him, and he asked the Con Ed guy right there. He's like, where do you think, you know, I want to, you know, get more of this story about the light bulb. Where should I go? He's like, you go to the coal fields of West Virginia. And he went straight to Taford Mountain. Dr. David, I think his name's David, I know you've had him on the show. Reed, is his name Reed? I'm bad with names, but sold that Mercury. You know, they took him to Cayford Mountain, and you know, this stuff's on TV nowadays. I mean, this show was just last week or 2 weeks ago or something like that. You know, and I mean, you can't look at that and say that's a damn good idea. You know, and of course, he went beyond the compact fluorescent. They showed the school, speaking of, I actually saw a video of the school on TV.
Marsh Fork?
The school with the, yes, Marsh Fork.
That's where we're going to be tomorrow.
Oh man, that gives me chills. I tell you, you're one of the ground zeros, and it's awesome that you know it. And I think that the universe is just going to keep plying and folding its energy into you, Bob, because you're a positive. I'm telling you, we need more Kincaids.
John Fox has jumped into this discussion about CFLs. Albert, he says, disposal of CFLs are an issue. However, the small amount in the bulb is tiny compared to the mercury released when burning the coal to run a standard bulb.
Yes, sir. True. I mean, and it is one of these
things. I think truly that's an educable issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can teach people how to dispose of those things.
Yep. Yeah, we don't even need to. We have LEDs. They're brighter. They have a better light. They're a little more expensive, but they, as you all know, LEDs are in anybody with any electronics. And it has light on it. It's an LED, and LEDs are very, very cheap, very affordable, very easy to mass produce. You know, I mean, they're going into all these things. They're printing up solar panels now and doing all these things that are just wonderful. That, you know, I didn't see happening 5 years ago. We in those dark, dark, dark days.
I have seen LED street. I've seen LED traffic lights.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing over the road semis with LED brake lights.
Mm-hmm.
I saw an LED flashlight the other day, and you know how it is with me and gadgets. I want one. I like flashlights.
Was it a Faraday one? One of the Faraday ones where you can shake it or wind her up?
No. This had batteries in it, but it was still pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, really bright, beautiful white light.
Really bright. Yeah, really, really bright. Yeah, those are the future. You know, they'll last 10, 15 years. And, you know, I mean, that they're going to be the future. You'll see, you'll start seeing those all over the place. And then we don't got to worry about the mercury as much. And, you know, I'm seeing all over the place? You know, and I know it, yeah, sure, it costs energy to start with. But, you know, we have a couple in my house. They're these stainless steel water bottles. You know, you really pay for tap water. And, you know, it is nice to, you know, transport water around so you could drink it, you know, but why buy these plastic bottles that we used to go through, I don't know how many, 10 million an hour or whatever we went.
Yeah, complete with their bisphenol A, BPA, yum.
Yeah, but now we got these stainless steel ones, and, you know, I look at this stainless steel, you know, water container, and I look at it, and I can imagine my kids taking it up into space. That's how durable this thing is. I mean, I could see this thing actually lasting and people drinking water out of it for 1,000 years or more. I mean, it's just, you know, and that's, to me, that's the things that we need to be doing. That's the ways we need to go. I'm glad the Iranian people aren't, you know, settling and you know, once their leaders tried to force something down their throat, they said no. And once they tried to really force it down their throat, they stood up and said, hell no. And now they're all standing up saying, you know, give me the power of being a martyr. I mean, my goodness gracious, that takes a, you know, it's...
That's when you realize that the tear gas and the guns won't work anymore.
No, exactly. You know, you can't, you know, it's like, you know, that was their weapon in a sense turned against themselves.
Well, that's when Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader, I guess you're not supposed to call him that according to the right wing, but he is. That's when he picks up the phone and says, by the way, who was the Shah's travel agent?
That was the CIA. I don't know if you get it.
Can we get a plane? Now, of course, lo and behold, there he is. You knew he couldn't stay out of this because he's still running around out there saying, you know, it's kind of pathetic because he's like Nora Desmond. I'm ready for my close-up. The son of the former Shah called today for solidarity against Iran's Islamic regime, warning that the democratic movement born out of the election crisis might not succeed without international support. which I'm sure he would be willing to give. The moment of truth. Yeah, the moment of truth has arrived. Reza Shah Pahlavi said at Washington's National Press Club, "The people of Iran need to know who stands with them." I'm ready for my close-up, Max.
Yes.
I mean, okay, I'm such a cynical guy, Albert, I am.
Mm-hmm.
But how did they manage to just trot him out at the right moment? I mean, this is not a guy who needs to be talking about democracy. Does he? He's old enough to know what Daddy did.
Yeah.
I'm thinking his name is still Mud in Iran.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, when you and this is what disturbs me about this, and I'm not trying to negate or criticize the determined heroic actions of the people in the streets, but the guy that's running against Ahmadinejad that got ripped off, Mousavi, he was Khomeini's right hand man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
I realize.
I'm sorry. I'm ugly paranoid, Albert. But the CIA is at work in this somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You remember they started these behind border operations in Iran back in 2003. So you know, it's billions of dollars more than likely, and you know that money's got to be spent somewhere. The only thing that I get hope out of this thing is that the Iranian people are actually just at least standing up and trying to get some, you know, positive direction, just to get the truth told. I mean, and that's nice. You know, that's what I'm hopeful to see. I want to see them do, you know, stand up for what's right, and they are. So you know I realize that Captain Kangaroo ain't on the list over there.
Yeah,
I realize that we're not getting anything awesome or anything like that, but
But this business of Pahlavi coming out is really creepy because, look at this. Listen to this language. He said many elements within the security forces, within the Revolutionary Guard, are showing discontent. There is an amazing reflection that is happening. This is a movement that has blown out of proportion, and then this, Albert, this. We welcome that. Talking about principles of human rights and democracy. We welcome that. Him and who? Why is he using the word we? Sounds to me like he thinks he's still royal.
Oh, he does. That's apparent. He definitely does. And, I'm sure they like the B people. They like them. These thugs and I hope they lose that without a doubt. I don't want to see that either. I don't want to see another puppet in there. I mean, my God, can we just let these people, all people just,
Self-determination is such a beautiful thing. Harry Truman had it right after World War II. Let the Iranians determine Iran's future for Iran. That's why he rejected Winston Churchill's call to overturn Mohammad Mossadegh and install Reza Pahlavi on the peacock throne. And it was only after Truman had decided not to run again and Eisenhower was elected that Churchill went back.
We must stop the desperate march of tyranny among those people in our oil fields, Ike.
And lo and behold, there's Kermit Roosevelt going, "I'm here, boss."
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, no more democratically elected government in Iran. So probably marks me as a shallow man. I want Reza Pahlavi and all of his riches that he stole from Iran when his daddy fled, I want him to go somewhere and live on a little tropical island somewhere and shut the up.
Yeah, amen. Yeah, no doubt. I hope so. We'll see. We'll see what we can get. We'll see what they can get out of this. I would be nice to see the Iranians, move a couple steps closer to what they had with, that got Mossadegh in there in the first place. we need that. We don't need Israeli bombs or American bombs with Israeli tags on them dropping on those people. I don't think they want that, and I think they know, you know.
No, but see, follow the money, okay, Albert? Because you got to remember, the Shah, our little puppet, recognized Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that really inflamed the people. And so, you know, come on, please, AIPAC. Right. You know, I was born at night, not last night. I can see what's going on here.
Yeah.
But, you know, the reporting I'm looking at from CNN, Albert, says that Reza Shah Pahlavi, you know, he's still got the name. Okay. It says, during his remarks, he broke into tears when he spoke of, quote, bullets piercing our beloved Nada. Kiss my foot.
Mm-hmm.
He no more gives a tinker's damn about Nada than a hog does about Sunday suits. Okay? He just doesn't. But by God, he'll get up in front of the National Press Club and cry some crocodile tears and talk about our beloved Nada if he thinks it'll return him to that stinking, filthy peacock throne.
Yeah, well, he's delusional. Yeah, these people are, well, that's not surprising. I think that's human-wide. You know, the people with power, people that quest power like that, they're always shameless. You know, they got, you know, little in the way of the soul. And, yeah, hopefully they get what's coming to them, no matter what positive, you know. They're certainly not a positive, attribute to the species, you know. I mean, people love to blame, you know, ideologies for certain things, but I just try to blame humans for these things. And I hope I hope I'm right and these days are over. You know, we just got to finish sloughing it off. Yeah, buddy.
I know. Well, Albert, good talking to you, brother. I hope the weather doesn't change again and you start freezing all over again.
Well, yeah, you know, I do miss the nice temperatures I used to get with my ventilation system from pulling the air outside into the computer, but, you know, I'll have to wait till it really...
That's
turns.
Okay. You can still overclock to 4.5 on air.
I need to get the part two and no money, but one day, soon. Yeah, we'll get that. We'll get that handled. All right, Brother Bob.
All right, take care, Albert.
Love to everybody.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. The Sage of Southwest Wisconsin, that's our buddy Albert, and we roll on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey. Listen, called that horrible Graham office today.
Yes.
And I asked him, I asked whoever I spoke to, I said, is there a government bureaucrat in between Graham and his health care provider? And the guy was like,
what?
Gave me the spiel about what. And I said, well, doesn't your boss get socialized medicine? Isn't the government providing his health care? Blah, blah, blah. You know, the guy couldn't see. I said, I don't know. He said, I don't know what to say to you, ma'am. That's what he said. I said, okay, that's my point. Have a good day.
Yeah.
Motherfucker. I didn't say that, but,
yeah, but you sure wanted to.
But you know what I mean? I mean, the absurd. I mean, he was just giving me, I mean, just like, you know, why don't you step back and listen to what the hell you and yours are saying? I mean, it doesn't even make any sense. This bitch is on television telling all these people, including myself, who don't even have a look in, that you want, you know, you don't want to be, you want to have a choice. Are you kidding me? The whole thing is making me sick because what seems to be going on is that the American people are finally awoken to the idea that, oh, my God, you know, we need to have something done here. They want the public option. They want single payer. And now we're looking at a government that is against the American people. I can't really describe it any other way.
No, that's what it is. If you've got 72% of the people saying they want a public option and some significant portion of them saying that they want single-payer health care and the Congress of the United States is hell-bent on doing anything but, then you've got a government that is actively working against the will of the people and has in many regards lost the right to claim the right to govern.
Well, no, what it is, what, no, but yeah, that's true. But what we have is, I don't know what it is then. See, this situation here is really crucial for us to look at, because if we lose this, at least people will know what time it is. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
I think that, you know, I don't know. I understand we're real beat down. I listened to your show. You opened up with that poor woman who was trying to make excuses for a fucking health crisis. What the I'm sorry to cut.
No. Sometimes it's in you and it's in the situation, Sandra. I understand.
No, I was just like, you know what, lady? Please. I was almost in tears thinking, my God, this is where we're at in this country. We got to apologize for being sick, and that's our fault, too. They've really done a number on us, Bob. A good one.
Oh, a big one.
I mean, because I'm sitting there thinking, lady.
Well, I gotta give you something that you will trust me. You'll write and you'll say, hey, Bob, I'm glad you did. You gotta go to JoeBagent.com.
Okay, yeah, I have that bookmarked.
He's got a new essay out today, and it's also republished over at alternet.org.
Okay.
And it's kind of a long, it fits in with some of what you're saying, because he's talking about the 2 years in his childhood when they got to be middle class.
Okay, I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but I know what he's like. That already sounds entertaining. What the hell?
You know, and it just coincides with the 2 years in his life when his daddy got to be in a union. And whether it's health care or a pension or just living with a little bit of dignity from day to day. You know, Joe's got his finger on the pulse. But what you raised with that business of, you know, we are screwed, there's an element of that in what Joe writes as well. And why? Because nobody expresses more plainly, I think, than Joe Bagent why we're screwed.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really like reading his stuff because, you know, he just breaks it down, and it's just sort of like, and, you know what I mean? It's just real clear, and ain't no BS involved. I mean, the whole idea when that guy said to her, oh, adult onset, I mean, just that made me sick. I'm like, you know what?
Because that carries the air of blame, doesn't it?
That's what I'm saying. It's already a setup, and it's like these people are so disgusting, and they've twisted so many Americans' minds, the idea that healthcare is a commodity, too. And if you're unlucky, as in not being born rich, you happen to be born without access to healthcare, well, you can just go crawl away and just die. And yeah. The Congress, Obama, with his bullshit about, oh, if we started from scratch, come on, dude.
We can start from scratch.
No, it's just a bunch of BS. I mean, you know, for him to stand there and say that, it's like, you know what? You ain't Bush. You know what the hell you're talking about. You know what I'm saying? I appreciate it all. I mean, I find it even more disturbing. It's like, you know what? You don't want to be president. Please don't come out with this bullshit. You see what I'm saying?
I read somewhere earlier today, Sandra, and I forget who it was, and I wish I could give credit, but I read somewhere earlier today someone saying, it is time for Obama to emulate LBJ, because LBJ is the only president in our history who has taken on the American Medical Association and the insurance companies and whipped their asses, made them like it, and won.
Yeah, well, no, but obviously, you know, and I have to listen to people I know try to make, you know, apologies for Obama, this, that. I'm sick of it, because another subject, but more of the same, he's extended this war. I thought the war was supposed to end, Bob.
Sorry, no, that's another how many billions? 106?
No, 100, yeah, but up until the end of the fiscal year, end of September, come October 1st, you know, what song and dance are we going to have to hear then? And where's the progressives? They're nowhere to be found. They're somewhere, I don't know what. You see what I mean? I don't know. I don't even think they even have a clue as to approach this situation with Obama, because,
well, see, I think there's a lot of progressives and or liberals, Sandra, who are experiencing a profound degree of cognitive dissonance right now.
Yeah, no, that's, you got it, that's it. And the thing is, I'm not, like, you know, blaming, you know, we wanted this person in, you know, wanted Bush out, all this sort of stuff, but please don't shirk your duties now. If he ain't working out,
Well, boom, it's time to protest against this fool. I don't give a F. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. And frankly, you know, I want to believe, and I know that there are a lot of people out there who think that he's still doing the Obama Wan Kenobi Jedi mind trick.
You know, that's a pathetic,
kind of a cop out, ain't it?
I know what you need to do. When you made him, we all like that. When we make a really bad mistake, shit, we want to say, oh no, everything else but, because you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be in that situation.
But what about that whole FDR thing where FDR said, I like your idea, I agree with your idea, now make me do it?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know.
And so that segment of the progressive liberal world that's sort of hanging on its own tenterhooks right now because they don't, you know, I don't want to criticize him, you know, I wanted him. Well, look, you know, maybe he wants you to criticize him. Maybe he wants your ass in the streets. Maybe he wants you protesting, because then he can point out his window and say, see, they've got the pitchforks and the torches, and I got to do something. And he gets to look at the Republicans and say, hey, they're coming for you first. They'll get to me, but they're coming for you first. Now, you can either let me save your ass, or you can go where they want to take you.
Well, no, but I understand. But, you know, then I go back to the comment that he did make to the bankers when he said, the only thing standing between me and the between you and the pitchforks is me. But he didn't say I'm going to step aside. He passed legislation to cover their asses. So, you know, Bob.
Well, but, you know, but you know what that's about, Sandra. That's about what goes down in 2012.
Well, what's going to go down in 2012 is his ass going to lose if the unemployment rate keeps going up. Because let me tell you something. His little tinkering ain't doing nothing for us. It's doing everything for them. But if unemployment is 12%, his ass is gone. And God help us with what's coming in.
By the way, what's coming in? His name is Jeb.
See, we've been going. Listen, I'm not even there to what the Republicans can replace. But I do think that Obama really should, you know, take a check, take a thermometer, do something, because this healthcare thing, this ain't no joke. You don't get polls from, you know, the corporate media saying 72% of people want nothing unless that's a problem. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
I mean, 72%, you know, it's a lot more.
But it's that tinkering you just mentioned. That he wants to be a watchmaker when we need a bricklayer.
Listen, I don't understand the mentality at all, because obviously I'm a liberal, but, you know, I run in a lot of different circles. So this issue here is really across, because all kinds of people have been screwed over by their health. You see what I'm saying? It's not a partisan issue.
Right. Except Republican families as well as Democratic families have been screwed over. Independent families have been screwed over. And most importantly, more people have been screwed over who have for-profit health care,
right,
Sandra.
Which is why
then don't.
They all...
I'm sorry. No.
Oh, no, no. Go ahead.
No. Which is why. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Which is why they all want a public option or single payer. That's what they want. But, I mean, they've distorted the argument so badly, but it's not working anymore. You see what I'm saying? I think people are just like, hello, I'm done. It's a global world now. You don't have to stretch too far to see what other people have. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. And see, like
it's
Dean
Baker.
Dean Baker is scary smart. All right? and he's got a truth out thing today. Spreading the wealth around to the insurance industry and friends. And, you know, again he just lays out these facts that just sort of make the sweat pop out on your hairline and the hairs stand up on the back of your neck. Because tinkering with this will be our damnation. We need bricklaying. Because just listen to this. He says, The bloat in the healthcare sector is projected to grow rapidly over the next decade as healthcare consumes an ever larger share of the economy. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, reports that just the increase in healthcare spending share of the economy over the next decade will cost us $4.3 trillion. That is equal to a healthcare tax of $57,000 for an average family of four. That's just the increase, Sandra. Now, CMS projects that $1.4 trillion of that, or $18,500 per family, will go to the hospitals. Doctors and pharmaceutical companies are each expected to score about $550 billion. That's $7,300 to the working family of four. The insurance industry share, $360 billion. That's just the rise. That's not what they're already making. It's just a rise of $360 billion or $4,800 for an average family. And the thing is, that insurance company never stitches a cut, never dispenses a pill, never writes a prescription, never removes an appendix, never sets a bone. They just sit and suck up money.
And, yeah, by denying people, keeping sick people out of getting health care. Listen, it's so simple, it's scary. You have a pool of people, you pay. When someone gets sick, you use part of that pool to take care of them, and we move on. How effing difficult is it?
I know. You know, where are these fiscal conservatives, Sandra? Because, again with the numbers, Medicare and Medicaid, all right? Less than 2% of its revenue goes into administrative cost.
Well, no, I mean, the contortion that's going on to keep this system in place while everyone suffers is mind-blowing, which, you know, I get back to this sort of inverted totalitarianism that we live in, this managed democracy. This is it in full effect, because when you have a policy that warrants 72, I keep going back to that because what little I know about political science, that's massive. Those are massive numbers.
Yes.
To be dealing with the issue. Trust me, it is. It's huge. Yet and still, Obama is still talking a bunch of bullshit with this from scratch. What starts from scratch? Is he going to use that excuse?
Well,
ended that war.
Sandra, isn't that a straw man in its purest definition?
It's just a joke.
You know, nobody has said start from scratch. I mean, look, I'll be honest. I don't want them to, but there will be a place in universal single payer for these damned insurance companies because they'll be the ones administering the program.
Well, not only that, but what's the thing that's so interesting that they never talk about is how these other countries, legally, by law, these companies can't turn a profit on primary care? That's a part of their legal system? You know, which is just stunning when you think about the madness that's going on here. I don't know, Bob. I just sort of I don't have a good feeling about it. I'm back to that being forced to buy private health care.
I know, and it doesn't give me a good feeling either, and I'm not trying to put anybody on a downer or anything, but this is further evidence in my ongoing developing thesis, Sandra, that, you know, we thought, you know, when we watched the bodies floating in the waters after the levees broke, we thought, well, they've broken FEMA. But we did not begin to fully understand that what they did over the course of those 8 years, primarily, but we can't forget about Reagan or the first Bush, or even to a certain extent Bill Clinton, they broke the whole damn thing. It's like Humpty Dumpty is off the wall, on the ground, the yolk is oozing out over the grass, and everybody keeps looking up at the wall. Hey, where'd Humpty go? It's broken. The whole damn thing is broken, Sandra. Our military's broken. Our healthcare system's broken. Our economy's broken. Our workforce is broken. The way we treat our working people is broken. The way we treat our children, for God's sakes, is broken.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of it can just be down to this, you know, constant need to privatize and this market solution BS. Because all of it is a is a load of crap. It's a load, right, as we can see. The capitalist system is definitely under stress, shall we say. But see, we're going to be pushed into this full-on corporatist thing because business meets government is in full effect.
Hey, welcome to Rollerball. Yeah, welcome to Rollerball.
I don't really want to. I know, you know, people are like, oh no, you know, you can't be blaming Obama, da da da. You know, he's this, that, or another. But I'm, you know, I'm starting to get a bad feeling about the blackface on it. I gotta tell you, all of it's starting to really get to me because he has the poll numbers. He can say, screw y'all, single payer. What are you gonna do about it? Trust me, if he wouldn't get all the support in the world from the people, you see what I mean?
I do.
He would do if on that corporate show they're doing. You heard about that on Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
That weird state. I have issues with that. It's like, what is this now? It's the network is going to do what? You know, are they in the White House and he's going to walk through and talk about the health care that we ain't never going to get? I mean, I don't know what the program is, but if he was to turn it into, hello, all you Americans, we're going to do single-payer health care. I need your support. What do you think would happen the next day?
Well, there would be a right-wing riot in the streets, what's left of them.
Right, but I still think that he could garner the support. But, I mean, the Democrats are so weak. I don't, you know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. And it's
Dianne Feinstein, that quote that I shared earlier in the program. You know, I don't know if Obama's got the votes to get.
No, I called her office, and she's like my senator, and I asked, what is her position? And I got the, well, she's still working on it spiel. I said, okay, that means she's not for it, and hung up. You know, I was really pissed off. I'm like, you know what? You killed Moscone. You've been hiding that for a long time. Now you're in the White, you know. Now you're in Washington. You know she's so suspect, right? You know all about.
I've read some of it. Yeah.
You know she made weird phone calls and stuff before Milk and Moscone bit it. She's always been in the mix. Next thing you know, she's mayor, and now she's
senator.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
But I don't mean to digress. I just am sort of that's disgusting with her. There's not enough votes. But what? I don't know. It all just makes me so angry. And on top of it, the war funding. Please explain.
Look, no. I mean, it goes back to that thing we were talking about last week. Unanimous consent on the photographs bill.
And that's scary. It's
Feingold, Bernie Sanders,
right,
the guys we respect.
Right.
What, they weren't there?
What?
And they just snuck this through in the dark and the still. Mr. President, I request unanimous consent that we screw the First Amendment and the people of the United States of America. By unanimous consent, it's passed.
Well, as that song said, they got the Fourth Amendment, keep your eye on the First. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. I'm mystified by this health care thing because not only would it remove that profit margin from it, I think it would stimulate the economy.
Well, do you think that those Wall Street banksters that he met with and told them about the pitchforks on the way out over tea and cakes or whatever said, oh, by the way, if you go with a single-payer health care, we're going to crash again and you're going to have to do some more bailing out?
Well, no, we're going to have to do more bailing out anyway, Bob. This is the thing. It's like the piecemeal, the way Obama seems to operate across the board. He's doing that piecemeal crap with the Wall Street regulations.
Yeah.
They're just going to blow another bubble, and the next bubble.
They're already working on the next bubble.
Well, no, the Treasury is the next bubble, which if that busts, we're really. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, we're down to paying for our entailments and hickory nuts at that point.
Right, because now they're, you know, because the Treasuries, the 10-year, they keep going up. And it's bad backwards. Your treasury, you shouldn't be going up when your interest rates are zero. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, well, they've doubled. They were like 1.2. Now they're like nearly 3. So something's really out of whack.
And well, that's the phone call from Beijing.
Well, we're monetizing our debt. Bad things are happening. And, you know, your average American is sort of, ooh, dude, ooh. You know, because no one understands that bullshit, and that's how they have it set up. But if you start looking into it, you just get scared. Like me, I'm really scared. I'm like, oh my God, how much quantitative easing is this going to be?
Yeah, and how many 50-pound bags of rice can you store?
And when are we going to find somebody else trying to smuggle $130 billion in bonds? You saw that story, right?
Yeah.
All that shit is connected. I don't mean to go conspiracy.
Pardon me, sir. Why are your pockets jingling? Oh, that's just spare change. Wait a minute. You've got the family silver in there.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, it's just weird. You don't just travel around with... And they've decided that some of those bonds are legit. I mean, the story is weird, okay?
It starts weird, weird in the middle, finishes weird.
Yeah, it's just weird. But anyway, you know, I'll let you go. I'm just sort of just totally frustrated.
It is frustrating, and part of the purpose of all of this is to try to figure out, how do we replace the frustration with action or some sort of positive movement forward.
Yeah, well, no, I...
You know, you've called Feinstein. I know you're calling. And by the way, we could use a call to Barbara Boxer on Thursday for S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. I know in the grand scheme of things it doesn't look, but it is. It's huge.
Okay.
The first hearing in a generation on strip mining in America.
Oh, and that's her committee, isn't it?
Yes, that is that's very much her committee.
What's that number again?
S-696, Appalachian Restoration Act.
696.
Yeah, Agnes and me and Ferg and Margaret and Doodle, we'll have our butts in seats in that hearing room because the coal industry's already chartered two luxury buses to transport the coal mob to D.C. to take all the seats.
Right, no, I'm about to ask you, I mean, you know how they be paying folks to sit? So, what, you guys are just going to get there early or what?
We're going to try, if we have to camp out like Star Wars tickets, we will.
Oh, God. Nightmares. Well, no, I'll call her too, because, I mean, I don't even know what her position is on health care.
It might be a good, you know, I can't imagine that she's totally wrong on it. I mean, she screws up every now and then. I remember her showing up to campaign for the Joe Lieberman against Ned Lamont.
Right, right.
But I think on 696, she's got to get it right, because heaven help California. You know, California's in bad enough shape that if anybody found coal anywhere, Don Blankenstein would be there tomorrow. With a drag line ready to take some mountains down.
Yeah, God.
And you know, the it's enough of a mess out there that someone, oh, yeah, come on, do it. Blow it up, baby.
Well, no, I'm waiting for here to for them. There are already little whispers of them opening up the coast. Oh, we need the money. So, you know what I'm saying? It's the, sort of the,
yeah.
The Klein disaster capitalism thing, right?
Sure. You know,
I
had an email from a pal of mine out there in Southern California the other day who said, you know, every crisis we've had before, we've either been able to tax our way out of or cut our way out of, but I don't think we can on this one. And she said, I think it may be time to head home. And that just broke my heart because, you know, this is somebody who has been out there and made a hell of a life for herself.
Right.
And just going to, nope, sorry, goodbye.
Yeah, no, it's really bad. It's really nasty down there. I mean, Los Angeles, you know, has the potential to be really Mad Max, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, everything is sort of in place, including the failed state of Mexico right below. I won't go that far, but, you know, that place seems like I'm still reeling from that daycare fire. That whole thing was, did you know that all the daycares were privatized in the last 3 years?
No.
Yes. Okay, they were all...
Well, you know, then they probably needed to save a little money by taking out the sprinklers.
Yeah, they were all sold off as part of their... It never-ending neoliberalism that is just, you know, wrecking the world, as far as I can tell. Good.
Well, that's what it's designed to do. Because there's money in wreckage.
No, and it's just, I was heartbroken. I'm like, are you kidding me? When I heard that fact about, because it was like 45 little ones burned to death.
Oh, parents driving their cars through walls.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, that one guy was charged for a property damage. The kid who drove his truck through, I'll have you know.
Jesus.
Yes, I thought that was a nice little topper. I'm thinking, you know what? Everything is just sort of ass backwards, you know?
I know.
But
meanwhile, because I just love this so much. Meanwhile, Pat Buchanan hosted a conference.
Oh, yes.
Heard about this?
Spelling?
Yes.
The can't spell?
He hosted a conference to discuss how Republicans can regain a majority in America. And the big topic that emerged was we need to support English-only initiatives as a means of attracting, quote, working-class white Democrats, unquote.
And they spell conference with two E's or something?
All this is taking place underneath a banner that says 2009 National Conference, C-O-N-F-E-R-E-N-E-C-E, Building the New Majority.
But the thing is interesting about that is that why is it okay for these white people to, because they feel they're under attack, now they can just be out-and-out hateful, that's okay. So now we, the rest of us who aren't, you know, racist fucks, have to be okay with looking at these people? It makes me sick. I'm like, you know what? What the hell?
Well, but the more terrified they become, we're not terrorizing them, but they are terrified, and I think, Sandra, their terror arises from what they perceive as their own guilt. Make any sense?
But the thing is, though, those sort of white folks, they're scary because they got the, I always say they got the American, they were born with the American Express card, and that is being cashed out in their minds. So they tend to go off the deep end killing folks. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because that American Express card has bought them a lot of guns over the years.
Yeah, they don't internalize it like some of us color folks do. You see what I mean? Them bitches will go and kill folks, and that's why it's pretty scary. Remember that one comedian who used to clutch her bag because she said that you white people scare me?
Yes.
That one?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's that mode. When I look at that crowd, I'm like, you people are scary.
Well, they are. I mean,
When I say you people, of course I don't mean you, Bob.
No. Hey, look, you know, no, I'm still working through stuff, okay? My grandfather was a member of the Klan, remember? I'm working some stuff off.
Oh, no. Well, I already told you that, I'm forever a recovering just racist. I used to be way out there with my, let's just say, dislike for Whitey, but I kind of reeled it back a bit.
Yeah, but see, you earned that.
No, you know, shit, I don't know about that, but I had to get a grip because I was had a big hate going when I was younger. So much so that I left the country, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but...
I left for 4 years. I was goodbye. I had to go.
And I don't know, did you see Whitey behaving better elsewhere?
I did. It was a Malcolm X tour, for real, though.
Oh, you did. See, you opened one of them doors, Sandra. I'll let you go in a minute, but only after I tell this story.
Mm.
So we're sitting at the table Saturday at the street fair and passing out our literature, and we've talked to our little mountaintop removal guy. And, you know, the kids are all wandering around. Ferg's going and having a good time. He bought himself a raffle ticket for a four-wheeler that's going to be given away sometime in 2010, and he is utterly convinced it's going to be his.
Okay.
But, you know, it's the cotton candy and all, then the band's playing, blah, blah, blah. And this kid is walking around, and he's got this ratty-ass T-shirt on with holes in it, you know, of course. I mean, it's your favorite T-shirt when you're 14, some T-shirt that's
right,
ratty-ass
right.
With holes in it. But it's black, and it's got blue lightning bolts all down the back. And then he turns around, and I kind of went, did one of those W.C. Fields triple takes?
Right.
When I see the front of this T-shirt, and the T-shirt is black with the Confederate battle flag crossed bars with the stars in them on the front of it. And at the top of it, it says, "You wear your X, and I'll wear mine."
Oh, no. A 14-year-old?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's too much.
And then a little bit later, I'm walking around, and I see this kid with a Confederate flag hat on, and he's been to the face painters, and they've painted his face as a Confederate flag. And I'm like, oh, I got to get out of here.
Oh, no, please. I mean, that just never ends, you know.
But,
well.
But it's one of those moments where you want to go, do you know what that stands for? But I know what the answer's going to be, because his daddy was wearing another hat just like it.
And a little 14, I mean, it just perpetuates.
Well, the kid with the face paint was maybe 9.
Yeah, oh, God, well, you got to keep it going.
You know, we got done, and I went to the top of the hill, and I got a Foster's oil can, and I just ran that right into my arm. Because... You want to say something to them, but
that's just our proud Southern heritage.
Oh, no. Listen, the phone's dying again.
Oh, well, okay. Sandra, I had to share that, so.
Oh, no. That's hell. Okay.
All right. Later, Sandra. It's a good thing Sandra's phone dies, because that probably just. I kid you not. That just. I mean, I live in the South. I know it's around here. And I see it on trucks and stuff. But, you know, when it's right there in your face and it's an 8-year-old kid with his face painted as the Confederate flag, and you just, what in the hell are you teaching your children? Who are you going to leave it to explain what that flag really, really, really means? I got an email, or I will go right back to the phones. Don't give up on me, okay? But I got an email from our buddy David in South Carolina. What I'm about to mention is not the really... The email is about the fact that... South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford, who was you couldn't turn around without seeing his the smarmy face talking about the stimulus, and his latest statement is that it's going to lead to slavery. It's going to lead to slavery. They really, really believe that Barack Obama is going to enslave the white race as some sort of gigantic payback. That's how, you know, Bill Maher again. The right wing has checked into a mental hospital. But there are some facts, and this is what that flag stands for. There are some facts at the bottom of David in South Carolina's email that just bear repeating. Under the Constitution of 1790 in South Carolina, white men were required to own 500 acres of land and 10 slaves to be eligible to run for the state House of Representatives. They had to own 1,000 acres and 20 slaves to be eligible to be appointed to the Senate. Quoting further, author William Duesenberg has described South Carolina as a charnel house among other slave states. Hear this statistic and imagine that child walking around with his face painted as a rebel flag. Over 55% of slaves on rice plantations died before the age of 15. Not 50! You didn't hear me wrong. 15. In addition to brutality from their masters, the deaths were a result of a combination of malaria and infant's feebleness at birth, which was caused by the mother's own chronic malaria and their general exhaustion from rice cultivation during pregnancy. You know, Barack Obama stood up in Cairo and said, that civil rights were brought about in this country not by violence but by peaceful protest. Now, if George W. Bush had said that, I would have said something about, oh, I guess he just forgot about that whole little dust-up from 1861 to 1865, the recent unpleasantness, if you will. But the fact of the matter is, there was an element within the struggle for civil rights that was a lot more radical than anything Martin Luther King ever said, and it was their agitation that suddenly made Dr. King the palatable alternative to them. Until then, Dr. King had been a commie, a pinko, a womanizer, a race mix, anything they could come up with. But he suddenly became worth talking to when a segment of the civil rights movement, Stokely Carmichael comes to mind, said, called BS on the whole thing and said, you know, this ain't working. And all of a sudden, terrified white America and terrified white American government said, maybe we ought to talk to Dr. King. Because them other ones, they want to kill us. "55% of slaves on rice plantations died before the age of 15, and a little boy is walking around a street fair in West Virginia with his face painted up like the rebel flag." I'm going to go right back to the phones, but I'm going to take a breather for a minute just to run and just... Okay? This is the horn.
This isn't Alabama. Oh, how well I know. I'm in central Germany.
The idea that Jason Ringenberg wrote that song out of the real experience. Of course, and that's the thing about that flag. That hateful damn thing. If you're flying it in Germany, it's stealth for the flag you'd really like to be flying, which is the red one with the black Hakenkreuz on it. Because they mean the same thing. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised when I see proud daddies on the day before Father's Day parading their 9-year-old sons around a street fair with their son's face painted with the most potent symbol of race hatred that this country has to offer. And no one says a word to him, and not even me, because I was a coward. So, go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Be ready for the dark horse in 2012.
Okay.
It's not going to be Jeb. You know him formerly from the Seaver family. Mike Seaver, a.k.a. Kirk Cameron.
No, not old enough.
No, actually he is.
Is he four? Will he be 44 by then?
You know what? I think it'll be close. But no, what I'm saying is he's like an example of a perfect Christian fundamentalist candidate, if you think about it. Because the fact that he's a B-movie actor, actually a D-movie actor, a D-movie TV celebrity, and he has gone gung-ho for Christian fundamentalism in his movies, in his specials. And he seems to me to be groomed just for that kind of area. He's like what Mike Huckabee wanted to be. That's Kirk Cameron.
Yeah, except Mike Huckabee had a son who hangs dogs from trees and tortures them.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to say was when you plan these trips, we're going to need to organize better so we can get the word out to a lot of the sites. And one of the things that I was saying is that brings up I actually saw the future today on Don Lemon from CNN looks to me to be an ally in a lot of different issues if people just reach out to him. And the reason why I say that is because he's been following people on Twitter on the issue of Iran, so I decided to go into his chat room where he was having a lunch, and they were just asking questions about what he was interested in, what he was doing, and stuff like that, and there weren't that many people in it, but what I found pretty interesting was, you know, you could just ask him normal everyday questions, and he responded to them. I guess he responds to his mail. So there's an ally that people didn't think of, Don Lemon from CNN. I'm sure if he knows more and more about the coal issue, that's going to resonate with him as well, because he seems like, to me, it seems like he really cares, especially with the way he's been responding to a lot of people on Twitter and his emails and all of that. Again, that's a potential one that I just mined out for you, no pun intended. But Don Lemon is a great choice in my opinion.
Cool. I'll try to study up some.
Well, I mean, what I'd like to see is people to maybe email him if some people you want to feel like a challenge, you could write a letter to him. I'm just saying this guy really knows his. He really knows his history. He's quite the chef, I hear. I asked him that question about gumbo. That's the one. I didn't ask him anything political. It just came to mind because they were talking about gumbo, and he says I'd like a question about. He wants to know a question about gumbo. So I asked him. I said, "Is it true in the South? The same question I asked you, that it is a forbidden rule to put shrimp and sausage together in the gumbo." And you know what he said, Bob?
What?
This is a story. Forget everything else. This is the story that should be on CNN. He said, yes, it is the forbidden rule. You see, that's the thing that blows my mind. I've never heard that. There are portions of the South that say no sausage and no shrimp together, which to me is kind of stupid.
Well, I'm trying to think. You know, I've never gotten a satisfactory answer on that.
I know. That's
everybody makes their own different.
I understand that, but...
But I guess, seafood gumbo versus some other kind of gumbo, maybe, I don't know. And I haven't made a pot in a while, and it's kind of the wrong weather for it now, but come fall.
Yeah, so I just wanted to add that about Don Lemon, but before I go, I wanted to put a recommendation for you. I saw a documentary called Encounters at the End of the World. It's actually about director Werner Herzog's trip to the South Pole, except this time he isn't studying penguins. He's studying people on the South Pole and the unique people who go out there to work there. And what's really interesting is he compares compares the little mining operation they have there.
Mining?
Well, not a mining operation, just the camp to a mining operation.
Oh, okay, I see.
And I was thinking of West Virginia, and a lot of comparisons they make to the moon. I guess it's a place called Camp McMurdoch. And what's amazing about it is just like the visuals that you get. You get a lot of there's a lot of underwater camera work for underneath South Pole. There's a part in it where they show you what the Waddell seals sound like underneath the ice, and they sound like, and I loved Werner Herzog's description. He says it sounds like Pink Floyd music, and it really does. They sound like lasers, Bob. I was like, holy cow, these seals sound like lasers. And then I was beginning to think maybe this is like the Navy's secret weapon or something. But yeah, Close Encounters at the End of the World is a great, great film. And if you guys get it on DVD, there's some great documentaries done by Henry Kaiser, who's a phenomenal musician who decided to put together these documentaries, what it's like to be underneath the ice and above the ice. So they're nice companion documentaries too, and they're silent, so you just have a lot of footage of looking underneath the ice. And for people who complain about there's no sci-fi in the world, just look underwater. There's your space right there. Everything you could possibly want. I mean, the footage of the jellyfishes, Bob, is incredible that they have. It's just amazing. And when you look at it, you just won't believe it, how close the cameraman's gone up. Oh, and the fact that they don't use, here's the crazy thing. This is just like, this will make you go, oh, Jesus. They don't use tether lines underneath the ice. These guys.
Oh, that's creepy.
I know, that is creepy. And I kept telling my dad when we were watching, I was like, holy cow, this is like the abyss, only underneath the ice. And they don't have any ropes or lines. So yeah, that movie I recommend to a lot of people, Close Encounters at the End of the World. It's Werner Herzog's film. It was Academy Award nominated. It came out in 2007. There's some great segments in there. Talking about these people. He asked the funniest question to one of the people who's watching a penguin colony, only he wanted to find out about what the guy did instead of the penguins. And he asked him a question about has he noticed any homosexual penguins. And the guy literally has been spending too much time with the penguins because he didn't know how to answer it. So he just kind of basically gave kind of like a basic background on one observation that he made on three penguins that he watched, but he didn't say that they were homosexual or gay. But anyways, really good documentary to watch. Is there anything that you would like us to do as listeners while you're in Washington?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact.
Okay, good segue. Here we go.
The bill is S-696.
Yes.
It is the Appalachian Restoration Act, David.
Mm-hmm.
The hearing is Thursday, and even if your senator is not a member of the committee, you need to make them aware of the hearing. And you need to make them aware of the fact that you not only desire, but expect to see them co-sponsor it and support it.
S-696.
Yeah, and it would be great if we had a huge groundswell of calling on Thursday. The hearing is in the afternoon, so if we get some early calling on Thursday morning, it may generate some interest on the part of senators who aren't even part of the hearing.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's see if we can get Don Lemon to mention it on the air for Thursday or Wednesday or whenever he can.
Cool. You want to take lead on that?
I'm not sure what you mean by take lead on it.
Well, I mean, do you want to try to make that overture?
To reach the Don Lemon? That's not a problem. I was actually thinking I was going to write to him this week and put together something that would catch his eye. Like I said, people, don't count Don Lemon out. I did, and that's a mistake. This guy stays up hours and hours and hours and pays attention to news and pays attention to what people are saying, unlike a lot of anchors, and he deserves his position at CNN. And I actually made him laugh. I said, you seem to be the successor of Bernard Shaw. All hail Don Lemon, and he laughed at that. So, you know, that's something that I wanted to pass to people. Don Lemon seems to me, put an asterisk next to him, ally. He seems to be like an ally. Or with a question mark. An asterisk and then a question mark, since we're skeptical and critical thinking people. So there you go. And also you can reach him on Twitter, twitter.com/Don Lemon, and I don't know if he answers, but I'm sure he reads every single one. But probably what you want to do is reach him at, go to the CNN page and get his email there, and I'm sure he'll you'll get better reaction there, since Twitter is going crazy for him. Thousands and thousands of messages people just are writing to him. So there you go. There's some there's some activism for you people.
Very cool, David. Very cool. Thank you very much.
And I will try to we'll try to get a see. Here's what I think. I think we can get some. I know when I see a media person and I say aha. I have that aha moment. I haven't had an aha moment with people in the anchors, but the way Don Lemon is reaching out to people, and what I mean by what I said, I saw the future, I went to this chat room that literally was like the Brady Bunch. And what I mean is, you know the beginning of the Brady Bunch where you got the six screens? Well, they had the six screens there. Here's the crazy thing about it. If you go to tinychat.com, this is like the new chat that a lot of people are signing up for versus Ustream, and I like it a lot better than Ustream because you have the six screens, and you can control the volume channels of the people who enter the room. And if you log into the room, you have the six screens, so you can see who you're talking to at the same time. But say too many people are talking at once, you can turn the volume down on each one. It's really an impressive, and it's really really sleek, and it's not glitchy. And to me, I've been in a lot of chat rooms, and Tiny Chat to me is looking more impressive by the day. So if people want to check out the chat room that I'm talking about, you're going to see a lot of celebrities. I predict this. You're going to see a lot of celebrities and media people, not because of just the Iran situation, but the changing of the world that we're in right now. This is where you can create a dramatic shift in what positions you want out here. Places like this where you can anchor to the media anchors, to the media icons or the media correspondents out there, or any of the people who deal in information and media. Because here's the thing that people need to remember. Even if everything goes downhill, we'll always have communication to some degree, and you have to treat it like currency. If you treat generosity and communication like currency, you will not have that. You will not have as many problems as you think. It's an illusion, people.
Very well said, David. I'm going to run along and share just a little bit more information about because you've lit a little fire under me, and I need to hit this real quick.
All right, you do that.
All right, take care, David.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Calling from Maine, our pop culture correspondent, and far more serious than that as well. That's David. And just to let you know, there's one more phone call. I'm going to try to hit that right quick. But I want to make sure that you have this information in hand. The hearing is being held, this particular hearing on Thursday, is being held in the Water and Wildlife Subcommittee of the Environment and Public Works Committee of the United States Senate. Barbara Boxer is the chair of that committee. By definition, she sits, I believe under the rules, she sits as an ex officio member of any subcommittee. The Water and Wildlife Subcommittee is chaired by Ben Cardin of Maryland. The other members are Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey, Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, Tom Udall of Colorado, and Jeff Merkley of Oregon. There's people there that can be talked to. The Republicans are Mike Crapo of Idaho. He's the ranking member. John Barrasso and Lamar Alexander. Lamar Alexander will vote for this bill because Lamar Alexander is a co-sponsor of this bill. This bill will get out of its subcommittee. There's no reason why it shouldn't. Tom Udall needs some pressure applied to him because Tom Udall has been kind of wishy-washy. But I don't think he'll be able to be wishy-washy after Thursday. Then it goes to the whole committee. This is the committee membership of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works. Barbara Boxer, as I said, is the chair. Max Baucus is on the committee. Thomas Carper, Frank Lautenberg, Ben Cardin, Bernie Sanders, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, Sheldon Whitehouse, Rhode Island, Tom Udall, Colorado, Jeff Merkley of Oregon, Kristen Gillibrand, that's the senator who replaced Hillary Clinton from New York, and Arlen Specter. Now, here's the joker in the deck. This is how they plan to kill it. The ranking member on the Republican side is none other than James Inhofe. A monster if ever one drew breath in the Senate. And he will do whatever Don Blankenship and the rest of the coal mob tell him to do. George Voinovich of Ohio, can't count on him. David Vitter of Louisiana, energy, 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 energy. John Barrasso, Mike Crapo, Christopher Bond of Missouri, no. And Lamar Alexander, yes. So the hearing is in the Water and Wildlife Subcommittee of the Environment and Public Works Committee. It is on Thursday, and if you will let your members of the United States Senator know that you know the hearing is ongoing, you expect them to co-sponsor the bill, and you expect them to support it on the floor, or if you happen to live in a jurisdiction that has a member on that committee, that you expect their wholehearted support. And don't give up the Republicans just because they're Republicans. They need to know that somebody out there cares about how they vote. It does matter. Handwritten letters do better. Make the phone call, send the email. But a handwritten letter carries tremendous weight with that bunch. It really, really does. So let's go to the phones. Oh, gone. Darn. So that's the program for the evening. I hope to be back on the air tomorrow evening. I may or may not, depending on how things shake out getting back from the Coal River Valley. We will be on the air at noon if everything works out correctly. This is going, again, you know, far be it from us to shrink from trying new technological things to get stuff out. And this is going to be huge because there is no cell service, there is no internet available where we're going. But if this satellite phone thing works out right, then from about noon to 1 or 1:30, you will have a live feed of the entire rally. The bill number, by the way, I'm being asked, S-696, S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. Yeah, that would be handy to have. So tune in to the Horn Stream, just like always, tomorrow at noon Eastern Time. I've already talked to Guy James. He might be absent anyway because of work requirements. So cross your fingers. I really want this to get to you. This is so very important. The possibility of hearing from Dr. Hansen is huge, especially in light of the fact that Don Blankenship has challenged him to a debate with one half of Don's brain tied behind his back, which means that he'll be reduced to the brains of something something approaching a paramecium. Cross your fingers. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch. I'll be proud to stand with them tomorrow and all our other friends in the movement to save Appalachia for future generations. It goes so much further than simple environmentalism. This is literally a struggle not to be erased from the earth. It is a struggle against ethnic cleansing. It really, really is. And Coal River Mountain Watch is kind enough to help us keep the horn going, even through their own struggles. They are the bravest, hardest working people I know. Alongside them stands you. And we are a little over halfway to our June fundraising goal. And on June's fundraising depends July. If it is worth it for the horn to be here in July, then we need to hear from you now. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, and you can also snail mail your contributions if you wish to the address that's also on the website. Thank you for your kind comments. Welcome, new listeners. Don't be shy. Call, share, email, write, chat room, anything. This is all here for all of us and all of you. Thanks to Peter Godbold. It was awfully good to hear from him. Thanks to John Fox, who will be pulling a midnight shift in order to make this all happen tomorrow. Thanks to Ben Birch, who will be watching the stream tomorrow to try to make sure this all comes off without a hitch. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard to the beginning of another week, and this one might be just a little bit on the weird side, but just the same, welcome to Monday. It is, I was trying to think of what we would call this day. It's a Mean People Suck Monday. That's what it is. It's a Mean People Suck Monday. And I'll get to what I mean in a minute after a little bit of housekeeping. The housekeeping has to do with this. It is going to be an odd and foreshortened week, without a doubt. Because sort of at the last minute, my family and I have been called upon to take a trip to D.C. You see, there is a Senate hearing on Thursday afternoon in front of the Water and Wildlife Subcommittee in regard to Senate S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. That's the bill that would end mountaintop removal once and for all, mountain removal once and for all in Appalachia. One might think of it as a companion bill to H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act. And for the first time in nearly a generation, a hearing is going to be held in the Senate of the United States about what is being done to Appalachia. And we the call went out for as many Appalachian people to be there as possible. And as I've told you 100 times, if I've said it once, I can't get behind this microphone and yammer if I'm not willing to do a little bit in my own regard. I can't ask you to pick up your phone and call your senator or call your member of Congress, call your councilman, your ward healer, your alderman, your library board member. I can't ask you to do anything if I'm not willing to do in my own right. And do we shall this week. So there's every likelihood there will be no show on Wednesday or Thursday, and very likely no show on Friday. There will be broadcasting tomorrow, although it might not be when you expect it. If you will, I would be mightily pleased if you will tune in at noon Eastern Time, which would be 9 a.m. Pacific, which would be 2 a.m. the next day Sydney time, because John Fox is involved with this too. For a live broadcast of something of rather significant import. You have heard me speak on a number of occasions about Marsh Fork Elementary School and what a potential nightmare that place is. Well, there's going to be a rally tomorrow at Marsh Fork Elementary School. I alluded to it late last week. The rally will be attended by many, many of the people who spend so much of their time fighting for justice for the young students at Marsh Fork Elementary, who fight to end mountain removal in Appalachia, who stand shoulder to shoulder with oppressed peoples all over the nation and all over the world, who are subjected to basically colonial status because of the natural resources in proximity to them. Cold River Mountain Watch will be at this rally tomorrow. I will be at the rally tomorrow, as will my family. And cross your fingers, stick your tongue out, and hold it just right, and don't move, and you'll be there too. Because the horn is going to bring it to you. You'll hear from these people I've mentioned. You will also hear from Daryl Hannah, the actress and environmental activist. And you may very well hear from Dr. James Hansen, who will attempt to deliver a letter to Massey Energy there right next door to Marsh Fork Elementary. This is garnering quite a bit of attention. You can tell it is because of the response of the thugs from the coal industry, and especially the mountain removal industry. There's a blog on last week's protest. There's a blog posting over at climateground0.org where you can see the full toxic flower of mountain removal industry hate. And you can see shameful illiteracy displayed in ways that make me, as an Appalachian person, weep for shame. And it's coming from the mountain remover side. There are vile epithets being hurled toward the people organizing the rally. Let's see. I think Ms. Hannah has been referred to as, "Why don't that Hollywood bitch go back where she come from, the whore?" Dandy Don Blankenswine, Don Blankenship of Massey Energy, has begun to issue press releases, which are dutifully subjected to media stenography in this state, since most of the major media are owned in whole or in part by people also deeply involved with the destruction of this state. Dandy Don Blankenship, Don Blankenswine, Don Blankenstein, has decided to take up the same. Well, you know, I guess when all you've got's an accounting degree from Marshall, you probably missed out on a lot of history. So he doesn't realize that he's standing shoulder to shoulder with George Wallace and Lester Maddox and, you know, Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond in decrying these outsiders.